Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. This is how we head back up here at Action Radio because it looks like my computer's working. I plugged into the right port in my computer and things seem to be happening here. It's a little warm out there. It's just like summertime has arrived. And Gene is having a little glitches up in the frozen wasteland up north. And I'm back here in the rather hot and humid. This is like lizard weather out there right now. And so it looks like I'm okay. And Gene, so let's bring in we'll do our little morning check here, make sure everything's working. Gene, I got you on the phone here. What's going on? How you doing? Having a little internet issues there, or what's going on in the world? Oh, wait a minute. No, it's I think I spoke too soon.
Hold on.
There you go.
I'm switching over to my computer. Yeah, sure, I'm having issues.
It's your turn. I'll tell you, this is why I'm so glad you're here, because if it weren't for you, we'd have any number. If it was just, I remember it was just me. And I had no confirmation whether I was broadcasting or not or what was happening. But it's the stupidest little thing. Like I say, I plug my microphone into the wrong computer port, and all of a sudden the signal just goes. But I leave it in another one, and we're great. So hopefully I've picked the right one. And what they say, the good Lord willing, the creek don't rise, and the things keep going as they're supposed to go. And I don't hear that horrible click and that sort of like that muffled sound of my microphone that tells me something's really wrong. So that's how we do it. Anyway, so I've asked the folks at Blog Talk about putting levels in, those little dB meters, computerized ones, and they're studying the issue. So hopefully that will change, and we'll actually get them, and away we go. So it should be interesting. So how cold is it up there? What are you suffering through right now?
It's wrong. It's minus 18.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, Saturday, New Year's is supposed to be a minus 15. It's like, what a way to start the new year. Yeah.
And for those that, in fact, it was funny when I was in Australia, I used to tell people, that I was from Canada and we would have, 20 below zero. They think zero is in freezing because they're Celsius scale, right? And so they say, well, 20 below zero, hey, that's cold, but it's not too bad. So they're 20 below zero is like 10 degrees. No, 20 below zero, real zero, Fahrenheit zero. So it's actually like, 30s below Celsius or something like that. But that's bone chilling cold. Now, sometimes when it's really cold, if it's dry enough and the sun's out, it doesn't seem so bad. However, that's not always the case. Get some overcast and wind and it's just brutal. So I guess people aren't talking global warming and climate change up there.
No, not really. But then it's like anywhere. It just depends on who you talk to. Some people are very fanatically into global warming and they don't want to hear reason. They just go with the talking head viewpoints and I get it. I mean, I was one of them at one point. I really believed in it. And then as I researched it more, it's like other things. I found out that, yes, I was wrong. It wasn't as they say.
Yeah, how about that? It's interesting. The more you look at something, I mean, I started life off as a liberal because that's my family. My family was like ultra socialist, especially on my mother's side, and her who's extremely radical feminist socialist the whole bit. And if that's your orientation, that's what you start with. And of course, it gets reinforced in school. I was up in New England at the time, and then you get out in the world. And I think what really shocked me was when I got to Washington. That Washington internship changed everything for me. It's amazing that one of the biggest reasons Action Radio is because of the 4 months I spent in the spring of 1980 in D.C. It's pretty incredible. But that's, is this what you guys really do? Really? let me reevaluate my positions, and the whole liberal thing. I was working with a consumer group. And to be quite fair, the guy that was running the thing, a man named Stephen Brobeck, this is the Consumer Federation of America, really, really decent man. Taught me just an incredible amount of stuff, allowed me to do some things that a lot of interns weren't able to do with the meetings I was able to attend and some of the things that getting some stories in newspapers and things like that. But as I became gradually disillusioned with the whole liberal idea, and something really interesting happened too, and this is something that isn't really talked about in liberal circles. There's this sort of attitude that you have to fight for the cause. You've got to suffer. You've got to prove your worth to serve the liberal cause. And I never understood that, but it's there. I mean, it's really there. Anybody that's tried to work in liberal politics and got disillusioned, so wait a minute. See, conservatives don't feel that way. They're just happy for the help. But conservatives feel inadequate, and they feel like losers all the time. So, you know, the liberals at least feel like winners, but you got to prove your worth. So everybody has their own, you know, ideological hang-ups and things like that. But it was very interesting. And, you know, I didn't feel I had to prove my worth or suffer for the cause or live in poverty, you know, just to prove I could do good work. That, you know, never made sense to me. But that's the attitude. So, you know, you got a lot of liberal folks knocking on doors, you know, begging for money, being poor, and suffering, you know, endless internships, you know, because they got to prove that they're worth, you know, suffering for the cause. And of course, at the other end of the extreme, you got the really rich folks, you know, the families you talked about, the Clintons and the some of the other people, the Obamas, the Pelosi family, yeah, all those folks are just, you know, filthy rich, or they're rich and filthy. I'm not sure which comes first, but there they are, and so they're not suffering for the cause.
Well,
they think they are the cause.
Yeah, and it's interesting how they like to keep people back. They don't like to let people reach their potential. They want them to be victims. They want them to be helpless. They want them to have to rely on the government. Yet, Pelosi and all of them, look how they destroyed the government and used the government for their financial gain. And if people say, oh, no, that's not true, then you look at how much money she had when she came into office. And look how much money she had now, or has now. And how did she get that? It's just like the Bidens. You can't tell me he got it up from even working one day's work, hard work. No, he doesn't know the meaning of work. All he's ever done was get it given to him because of, you know, connections and what he did, you know, as far as the corrupt and all the things he's done. It's like so sad if that's what you base good politics on.
Well, who paved the way for Joe Biden? Was Joe Biden's father a big political operative, or uncle, or cousin, or mother, or sister? Or I mean, generation ahead of him. Who paved the way for him?
I think what happened to him, he's just been in politics for so long that it didn't take long for him to find the corrupt ways to make money, to get ahead, to use and abuse people. And then I think you had Jill. I think Jill's the big mastermind behind it all, because I think she likes the attention, but not, you know, not directly her doing it. I think she likes it because he's got it, so that makes her look big.
Yeah, that might be an investigation. Actually, a couple of them. If you want to take on Jill, I'll look up Joe and see what his. This is after the show, but I'd be curious to how he got his start. Was there some kind of political connection? I mean, look at the Kennedys. The Kennedys got started because of Joe Kennedy, you know, dad, grandpa, who was, you know, an accused rum runner, you know, which I think is kind of funny, actually. I mean, that never bothered me because I never liked prohibition anyway. It was a stupid policy. So is breaking a law, you know, is breaking a stupid law really a violation of the law? Well, not according to the Supreme Court. If it's unconstitutional, it's not really a law. So it's kind of interesting. But he made a ton of money. He made a whole lot of money.
If you look at all the what history talks about him, everything, he wasn't a very nice man, you know, but he was shrewd. And Pelosi's shrewd. I think Biden in his day was shrewd. Biden in his day was just corrupt, too. I mean,
he was a prostitute. Even the minute.
I just go back to Hunter and all Hunter stuff. Hunter didn't get any of his anything based on merit, based on work ethic, based on his knowledge. He got it because of who Joe Biden, not even who Joe Biden was, but what they could get from Joe Biden.
Well, look at Hunter's
mutual win-win situation, use-use situation for both parties.
Yeah. Well, look at family dynamics. You know, take your typical dysfunctional Biden family. You know, you've got dad whose value is how much money he can bring to the family, and dad values how much money the other family members can bring to him. Okay, so you've already got a dysfunctional relationship there. You've got Beau Biden, who obviously was the favorite son. He was the golden child. As I understand family dynamics, having looked into the dysfunction in my own family, there's the golden child and there's the sacrificial lamb. So one child gets sacrificed, the other child is the golden child. Beau was the golden child. I mean, you listen to You know, Joe talk about Bo. Bo is everything. Rumor has it from a friend of mine, and this is something we should look into also. He had that blastoma cancer that people get from too much cell phone use.
Uh-huh.
And so people that get cancer, you know, they get cancer on the side of their head that the cell phone always was on. Gee, that's kind of suspicious. They get, you know, a chest tumor right where the cell phone pocket is. You know, I don't know what the people are carrying. Folks carrying their back pocket in their pants are probably a little better off. But even so, I don't know if you can get cancer there. but the point is that that's highly suspicious. Of course, that's never talked about. That's on my list of projects to look into, as is the venerable and often disgraced Mike Pence. You know, I was looking at Gateway Pundit this morning, starting to investigate some of the stories on him. He's the one that really put Biden in the White House. And so that's not really talked about. And I might have let it go, except that he thinks he can be president now. And so he'll be starting to make the rounds, and he's going to get nowhere in the Republican Party.
He is nowhere. He's going to go nowhere fast.
Yeah, yeah. He was a terrible vice president. Yeah.
Yes, and in fact, he'd be better off to not even go anywhere, for the fact that I think if there are people that like him after he starts running for president, it's even going to be tarnished more, because more information is going to be put out there about him.
Well, and that's the thing. Gateway Pundit has four stories. I was looking at them this morning, so that's probably what I'm going to talk about tomorrow. So for those that wonder how I do what I do and how we do what we do here, there actually is sometimes some planning, you know, and then sometimes I just wake up and go, what the hell will I talk about today? But there's always stuff in the works behind the scenes. So this is a dual show. This is not just a radio show. This is a citizen legislature. And what's happening with the citizen legislature is we put out a huge press release this week on our 25 bills to rock the nation. So what I've compiled from the folks that have been writing bills, I got a few of my own in there too, but from our bill writers across the country, we have 25 bills that I think are representative of some of the best of our work. And it's hard to limit, because I like so many of the things that are on our site. And that's at writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. And what's fascinating is I'm still hoping that somewhere along the way, somebody running for Congress will pick up on this list and be the first person running Congress, you know, to run on citizen legislation. That will be historic. And so that's what we're going for. So if anybody wants to help their favorite candidate running for Congress, go to our site, writeyourlaws.com. Again, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. Click on legislation on the menu bar, and then go to all proposed laws, because those are the ones that are in shape and have been submitted. And so we have citizen bill ideas. That's where we put the things that are in process. Those are like good ideas, but yeah, it needs some more work before they're ready to go. More public comment, more thinking, you know, they're not ready. So all proposed laws, those are the ones that have already gone out to generally Matt Gaetz at the congressional level, because he's my congressman here in Florida, various folks at the state level. And, of course, you can send them to your states, your members of Congress, your senators, your governors, anybody you want to. This is a very open citizen legislature. So that's the behind-the-scenes work. That's the stuff that goes on off the air. On the air, we talk about all the issues, because it's the things that we talk about that a lot of times lead to legislation. And that's what makes us unique in the world today, the fact that we follow up with legislation, with citizen bills. And you're, you know, perfectly welcome to do that. In fact, the whole point is that regular folks like you listening, whether you're listening live or podcast, is that you have the ability to go to writeyourlaws.com and put your own bill there. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be something outrageous. You know, don't write in legalese. We don't deal with legalese here. We don't write bills, you know, as lawyers would write them, although we do have a lawyer that writes some of our bills. That's Jonathan Mosley, who's got some fabulous stuff. But the point is that it's really open for anybody, and we're trying to bring legislation to the place where anybody can understand it. You know, one page, two pages, single subject, you know, something that increases our freedom. That's pretty much the criteria. And you look at any of our bills, every one of them is promoting the general welfare, not the specific welfare of individuals, corporations, you know, wacko groups or things like that. It's all very much the general welfare as the Constitution calls for. Let me digress for a moment. Speaking of the Constitution, we had one of our regular reporters, our food person, Paulette, yesterday was talking about something. I had never heard this before, that the Constitution was written for the group, and that it's not based on individual rights. It's based on, you know, what we all do for each other. I got after her for that. Gene, I don't know if you had a chance to comment on that. I don't know if you want to do it now or just kind of skip over and let it stand. But if you didn't hear the conversation we had, check yesterday's show, the first half hour of the third hour, first part of the third hour. Was just very different Something I did not expect at all. Did that strike you as a view of the Constitution you'd not heard, or?
Yeah, I had not heard that before. So that was it's just interesting how people learn things and stuff like that. Obviously it was it's out there. I mean, it was out there because that's what, you know, how she was, I don't want to say brought up, but that's how she was taught about it. So very interesting.
Yeah, same words. I look at the words. She looks at the words. Diametrically opposed meanings. I mean, total opposites. You know, and that's what makes it so fascinating. And this is, I think, this goes to a lot of what we are running into with COVID, in that, you know, the information's there, or it's like the selection of information. What do you use to back your arguments? I mean, obviously, I pick certain arguments, certain articles to back up what I'm saying. You know, and I see a lot of articles as pure propaganda and fluff. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with them because I know they're lying. But because I've already made my orientation, my decision as to what I think the truth is based on the people that are saved as opposed to the people that are lost. So to me, it's very empirical. It's not a, you know, I believe in this, you know, people who believe in climate change, you know, who can't explain it. Okay. Well, I don't believe in, you know, hydroxychloroquine. I see that it works. Okay. So in that respect, yes. You know, ivermectin, same thing. I don't put it on a pedestal and go, you know, oh, great ivermectin. You know, I don't believe in it. I see the results, and the results are that it cures people. And so that to me is very empirical. And so when it comes to people saying, well, that doesn't work. Well, why doesn't it work? Well, because, you know, Dr. Fascia said it doesn't work. Well, of course, those are our terms, right? That's a belief system. And I think part of the problem that we get is that the beliefs, the assumptions, the things that people latch onto, the sort of the anchors of climate change and, Trump's racist and whatever handle people latch onto really governs how they think. And you know, it's the filter by which the information that they want flows in. It's really kind of interesting.
Right. Yeah. But the thing is, it's like research. I know someone that he always says, if it's not double blind and whatever, it's not true research. Well, the thing is, with any research thing, it's like the outcome you want is usually the outcome you're going to get. Why? Because it's like when you're looking at things, that's how you're looking at it.
Yeah. We've talked about this before on the show, and I think you're absolutely right that, you know, which comes first, the conclusion or the evidence? Well, you know, if it's a government study and the government policy is, you know, climate change is an existential threat to our existence. How many people even know what the word existential means? I didn't know what it meant. You know, I thought it was like an extra threat. I didn't know it means a threat to our existence. I had to look it up. Because I hear this word used all the time. I mean, how many people, you know, will even relate that? They'll just kind of parrot it back. Well, climate change is an existential threat. Well, what's an existential threat? I don't know. Why are you saying it then? You know, so it's, again, assumptions and truth. Okay, I've got some. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And that's what makes it so interesting, because it's so hard to have a conversation with someone that just talks talking points, because I don't think a lot of times they don't even understand what they're saying. They're just spewing something back that they've been told, but it's like, okay, what does that mean? What does that mean to you? I mean, they can't even say it. They don't know what it means to them. And that's what's sad. It's like, I think we need to do a better job, each one of us, when we believe something, find out why, discover, you know, go inside, ask the questions to yourself, and really make a good decision versus, okay, this is, I believe that because so-and-so said. Okay.
Well, in the same way.
If you want to do that, fine, but you're giving your power away and just your cognitive abilities, because it's like, it may not be anything close to the truth. And not that the other person is lying, it's just that that's just what they believe because of something someone else told them.
You know, it's interesting. The internet is such a wonderful device because it allows us to do things that, you know, we never thought, never could do before. Like, you know, when I was a kid, I was dependent on the information I was given in school, by my parents, you know, things I read, newspapers, you know, stuff like that. The sources of information were very limited. And a lot of times I got bad information and made bad decisions based on bad information. And a lot of our generation did that. And what's interesting now, because of the internet was one of the most freeing things for me. I love the internet because for the first time in my life, I was able to look up multiple sources, multiple points of view, and start making decisions for myself, but actually get, you know, accurate information, you know, because it was impartial. People were just putting things out there. Now it's different. It's interesting that the whole thing has turned, and big tech has sort of gone from providing every information to everybody as openly as possible to start channeling and controlling. And this is always happens. Maybe this is the natural progression of things as they go. I've got an article I don't want to get to today, but I will sometime soon. Go ahead.
I want to make a comment. It's interesting because you go on like Google or whatever your browser thing is, and then you go on DuckDuckGo, and there's so much more you can get on DuckDuckGo. And it's like, That just tells you a whole lot right there. But also, I've said this before, the internet gives us enough information for each one of us to be dangerous too. Because what happens is it tells you stuff, but sometimes, like I'm talking medical stuff here for an example, you can go in and you're having whatever chest pains or whatever, and you can right away come up with, oh, I'm having a heart attack or I'm having this or that, and it could be the farthest thing from the truth. And I don't want to say don't go to the hospital, no. But what I'm saying that is sometimes we look things up and we find something that's like, oh, that's it. And it's like, oh, keep digging because that's not it. But it makes us dangerous because we don't know all the facts. We find something, latch onto it, and that's that. And so it's like, oh, boy. And I'm right there. I can't say I'm not because I have.
Well, we just went through that on the show here with me. You know, did I have Omicron or did I have a cold? We did that same just last week or the week before, you know. And so you don't know because the symptoms are the same. So I'm talking to, you know, various health professionals saying, well, should I get a test? And they're like, well, there's no point. You're not symptomatic. Well, I said, when I was symptomatic, I didn't want to get tested because I was probably contagious with whatever cold I had. So why would I, you know, subject myself to folks at that time? It's especially I knew I was going to get over it anyway. Such a mild thing, even though I did cough and cause some consternation. As I'm, Gene, can you take over? There were a few times when I literally could not speak. It was pretty funny. So, you know, but a short glass of water later, and here I am. So, you know, or there I was. Yeah, go ahead, Gene.
But Greg, I want to make a clarification. I talked to the person last night again about who was billed $100 from his insurance company for going to get a COVID test.
Uh-huh.
The truth of the matter is his insurance company was billed over $400 just for him to go get a COVID test because then they had to take his blood pressure and his temperature, and they wound up charging him, for whatever reason, $400. That is not right. If you're going for a COVID test, that's all they should be giving you. I don't understand, because every time I went someplace for a COVID test, which I had to go to for work, they didn't charge me that much, or my insurance. That is awful.
Yeah.
His insurance paid over $300, and that's why he still has $107 yet to pay. And he's like,
wow.
I'm not paying it because that is not why I went in there. I went in there for a COVID test.
You know, it's interesting that the blood pressure and temperature are like one of the most routine things, and heart rate. You know, that's like basic check for when you go to any doctor's office. That's the first thing. My dentist checks that. You know, before, you know, if he has to like numb me up or so, or, you know, I mean, anybody can check, depending on the thing. I mean, I think I had a tooth extraction and it involved some pretty severe, you know, numbing. And it's like, well, just check your blood pressure. Okay, fine. You know, so I mean, they're checking stuff all the time, and that's just normal. But the idea that you have to pay $400 for a machine that's probably been long since paid for, you know, it's just, it's a crazy thing. But, you know, and the whole idea of COVID tests, I find it funny that there is no test for Omicron. There is no test for Delta. You know, there isn't, you know, the original test is probably, there isn't even really a COVID test because it can't tell flu from COVID. So it probably can't tell colds either because, you know, they're all the same coronavirus or similar family of coronaviruses. And so this whole thing's a joke. So I asked this person, I said, well, how do you tell, you know, whether someone has an Omicron variant? Well, we guess based on the symptoms. Well, how did you develop the symptoms if you couldn't isolate the variant? I don't know. It's just there. It's in the medical literature. Well, how do they know? I mean, how do we even know there is an Omicron variant? Variant. If you want to get to that point, it came out of South Africa. Well, that's nice. Maybe they needed the publicity. I have no idea. So well, the more you do this, the more skeptical you get about literally everything. It's kind of interesting.
But could Omicron just be the flu?
Could be. It's the right time of year. But I'd say if it was the flu, it's the most mild flu I've ever had. Now, when I got the flu in past, you know, flu for me, it's been 30 years. or more, something like that when I was younger. But and usually when I was, you know, like college, overworked, you know, probably a little hungover, you know, especially after a big marching band weekend, you know, taking a double academic load, which I did, and participating in various other groups and activities. You know, I mean, I was stupidly busy. Sure was fun, though. But anyway, I think the one or two times I caught flu, you know, in my college and earlier, you know, 20 years, it was fever, it was chills, it was bedridden, it was throwing up, it was miserable. Through about 3 or 4 days of just, ugh. And I lost about, you know, 10, 15 pounds. Well, not that much. But I lose, you know, several pounds because I didn't want to eat anything. I was barely able to drink anything. You just kind of lie in bed and go, you know, one more day, you know, two more days. You know, you're just waiting for it to go away. Oh, bathroom trip. Oh, back to bed. That's the flu. A cold you can function with. Yeah, it's miserable. You know, you're stuffed up. And especially, you know, when I had that cough that, you know, covered like 3 or 4 days of the show. That's not flu. That's, to me, that's just a cold. And it seems like the coronavirus, the newer variants are much similar, more similar to a cold, as opposed to the earlier, more serious alpha, which was much more like a really bad flu. And I don't know if people who had COVID had the fever, the chills, the shakes, you know, the throwing up all the time that a typical flu bug will give you. Or as I had once from a cruise, the norovirus, which is miserable. That's like flu, you know, on steroids. But, you know, it's very interesting. But I don't know. I don't know. Is Omicron more like a cold? I mean, they can't tell. They don't have a test for it. Why don't they have a test for flu? How do they test for flu, Gene? I mean, I know they have tests for flu. You know, how would they know?
I think just signs and symptoms.
Okay. So
yeah,
it's like flu,
I mean,
like those generic things.
So I don't know, but yeah. But it's interesting now too how they want, the CDC is changing the amount of time you have to spend quarantined when you get exposed from 10 to 5 days or whatever they're doing.
So why would they do that? Why would they do that?
My personal opinion, for what it's worth, I think it's being a hardship on medical providers and other providers to pay places of income. And so they're trying to figure out how they can get people back to work fast enough, because bottom line is that I just know one person where I'm at here. I don't go to that building anymore, but I can't tell you how many times since I started with the company that she had to go home and work from home. She's in management, so of course they can work from home. And how many
why would they
times,
manage the place they manage? Why would they be at the place
but,
they manage?
But for the fact that she had to work from home and be quarantined because she was exposed to someone that had the virus. However, it's ironic because even back then, when I was exposed to patients that had it, that later found out they had it, that we didn't know they had it at the time, and yeah, you've gone up and stuff, but it's just, you do things a little bit different with someone that has it versus someone that doesn't. But what I'm getting at is they never told me to go home and quarantine, so it's interesting how they tell certain people to go home and quarantine and others not, but I think that's it. I know some places that, yes, 14, they were usually having people stay home for 10 days. Some places were doing the 14 days. And
school
that's
kids
a,
primarily.
That's a lot of time for someone to be away from work, away from school, whatever. Yeah.
That's most people's vacation. It's 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so it's very interesting. Yeah. And so they're sending managers home because they're special. But so the frontline workers, the nurses, doctors, you know, health people that are involved, everything from the receptionist to the janitor to everybody else who's in a hospital with COVID patients, they're on the front line, as they say. They're being exposed every day. And quite frankly, anybody who rides public transportation, anybody who goes to a public place, anybody who gets out of their house and sees anybody else, you know, is probably exposed to COVID. COVID's an airborne virus. It rides the air currents, folks. That's what it does. You know, although I'll tell you, it'd be interesting. It's not going to survive, you know, where you are, way up in the frozen north. You know, it's not going to survive outside. You know, if you breathe COVID out, it's dead. You know, the minute it leaves your lungs, because that air is so cold, it can't survive in that. You know, so all the transfers where you are going to be inside. Yeah, but folks in the frozen Northland spend most of their time in the winter inside anyway. You go from your heated house to your heated car, you know, from your heated garage to your, you know, your heated parking garage, to, you know, your heated office, you know, and everything's inside. And it's like people live their entire existence almost inside. And, but that's where it transfers, is inside, because it's a warm environment that the virus does very well in. So it's kind of interesting. Get some fresh air. Right. Bring in some of that cold blast of air. Yeah. Or you should go out to lunch and breathe in that 17 below zero air. But breathe it slowly because you can't freeze your lungs. You can. I mean, you literally can. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's what's interesting. So I think it's a financial thing too. They don't want people off work for that long, especially companies that are already struggling to get employees. And I'm not saying, you know, all healthcare places are like this. So, you know, other places, if you had signs and symptoms, they told you to go home regardless who you were. But it's just interesting how they pick and choose. It's just like how they pick and choose just the mandates and stuff they're doing now and what you should or shouldn't do. It's like, you know, if it was this important, the mandates, the recommendations should not be changing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, too. It's much more of a political consideration. There's a story I just ran out of time before the show started this morning, but some of the pilots, I think, are complaining to the FAA that the vaccines that are being mandated, the GMO shots, they're not approved. These are the experimental ones still.
Right.
And apparently the FAA regulations prohibit the use of experimental drugs. So the airlines are requiring something that the FAA bans. And so they're having a little issue over that. So we're going to have to I might check that out when I play my Santa Rosa Volunteers. I'm going to make a new one today. It's getting a little bit behind here, which happens so often because there's so much going on here. But I really want to get that press release out because there's a lot of politicians. There's a lot of candidates for office. There's a lot of news sources that should be sharing the things we do here, and they simply aren't. And so we need to kick their butts. And so that's why I started doing press releases. If you want to get on our press release list, I don't mind. You know, just write me here at greg@writeyourlives.com. That's our public email site, so you can do that. It's the best way. Or just call the show and say, hey, I want to be on the list. And then I'll tell you to, you know, don't give your email over the air. Then I'll tell you to do that. And I think we'll have a listener list of some of the stuff that we put out here. But basically, you're going to know anyway, because I'm going to tell you on the show what exactly we're doing. And so this one is in our 25 Bills to Rock 2022. It's Action Radio's guide of citizen legislation for candidates for office and for the geldings and the GOP to actually have some new ideas for a change, things that they can actually use to run on if they ever had any, intestinal fortitude and actually wanted to be pioneers. I mean, when's the last time – here's one for you. When's the last time, other than Trump's wall, when's the last time the Republicans had a new idea? Anything. I mean, just a new policy, a new idea, something revolutionary. I can't think.
I can't think of anything either.
You know, I mean, yes, everybody wants, you know, less government. Everybody wants fewer regulations. Everybody wants lower taxes. Everybody wants balanced budgets. Okay, that's not a new policy. In fact, those are so old and tired, I'm surprised they're still, you know, trying to make them sound new. But, I mean, when we talk about genuine new policies, we're talking about things here like jury instructions so that you know about jury nullification, like Jonathan Mosley's bill to create a liquidity corporation to handle all the bankruptcies that are going to come up when the stimulus COVID money runs out. There's like Dr. Peter Pry's bill on electromagnetic pulse, you know, protection of the power grid. Things like, you know, we have our whistleblowers from the VA. We have a bill that's in, you know, the committee in Washington, the Veterans Affairs Committee, you know, to actually protect the whistleblowers from the Whistleblower Protection Act that doesn't protect the whistleblowers. You know, we have a bill that says there's no income withholding during the time you're earning your standard deduction. These are all new ideas. They're all simple, basic, you know, straightforward nuts and bolts kind of stuff. You know, fingerprint voter ID. That's Josie's bill. You know, Pianki's bill on separating the ballots between federal and state so that, you know, they can be tracked more easily and managed more easily. You know, it's just nobody else is thinking of this stuff. And just regular people are coming forward and saying, hey, I got an idea. You know, I'll tell you another idea that I want to pursue, too. I want to find a military person on a military pension because the idea that people that get military pensions can't get their full Social Security pension that they've earned also is crazy. You know, the government limits pensions if you get too many. You know, they start limiting. Well, that's BS. If you've earned the pension, if you do 20 years in the military, 20 years in the post office, and, you know, work a few more years, you know, for Social Security, you should get all three pensions. So there's something he's doing. And I'm not in favor of Social Security, but if you've earned it, you get it. You know, so these are the kind of ideas that we have no one else has even thought of. And this is why I love the idea that citizen legislation is going to, you know, generate the ideas. And not only that, here's what's going to get interesting. Because the generation of the ideas is only part of the equation. As Einstein said, 2% inspiration, 98% perspiration. So the 2% of the inspiration, that's done. We've got that covered. Okay, we know how that works. It's the 98% perspiration that we have to hopefully encourage everybody else to do in sharing the show and sharing the bills. But I'm really curious because, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen. This is the great unpredictable future. What's going to happen if several million voters get behind our bill to put vaccine liability on the manufacturers, on Pfizer? If they're actually fully liable for the products that they produce, they're making us, you know, a whole bunch of people take, you know, what's going to happen? I mean, at what point how many votes and how much pressure and how many polls can counterbalance the lobbying dollars of Pfizer, for example? You know, I don't know what that point is, but I want to find out. What do you think? I love putting these huge things on jeans like, oh, Greg, you didn't
do that. I'd be curious and interested to hearing.
Yep. So if anybody knows what we're working towards, that's what we're working towards. All right, let's get Brandon's schedule for the day. And I happen to have the factba.se/Biden/calendar/. And it says Joe Biden, president's public schedule. Well, I don't know why they even say president with the word fact-based in it, but we'll let that go for now. So Wednesday, December 29th, that's today. Here is your White House occupant. First thing, 11 a.m., press briefing by White House COVID-19 response team and public health officials. James S. Brady, press briefing room, 11 o'clock. Scheduled ending, who knows? That's it. That's it. Then at 5 o'clock, then we have 2:30 out-of-town pool call time. I don't know what that means. I guess that's for press people. So he's got a briefing. He's actually listening. He's not giving. He's listening to a briefing by the White House COVID-19 response team. That would be Dr. Fascist and Francis Collins and what's-her-name at CDC, telling him, you know, what his marching orders are. And then at 5 o'clock, guess what? The president and the first lady, what we know as Joe Biden and Jill Biden, euphemistically called president and first lady, depart Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and route Wilmington, Delaware. So he's going from his beach house to another house. He's not even at the White House. So how's he getting this? So the press briefing is actually not – the president's not actually – well, excuse me. I'm sorry. I misspoke. Brandon's not actually going to be at the press briefing by the White House COVID response team. They're giving it. So, in fact, he has nothing on his schedule today other than going from Rehoboth Beach – and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong – to Wilmington, both in Delaware. So his job today is to travel partway across the state of Delaware, which is the size of what? Santa Rosa County? Delaware's not very big. You're Brandon at work, December 29th. Gene?
Well, that's probably the least dangerous stuff he can do.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Actually, the less he does, the safer we are. But that goes for most of the government. Yeah, okay. Anyway, I'm going to make this a daily feature just so anybody that says, well, he's really the president. Really? Well, what's he doing? What's he doing that's even remotely presidential? First of all, I don't want him doing anything. So that's kind of a thing, too. All right, let's take a little break here. I'm going to play by Santa Rosa Volunteers. I don't think Dave is joining us at 7, so we got lots of time to chat. So if anybody wants to call in, 215-383-3832, please feel free. And we are live this week. You know, the podcast happens after the show. So we're live 6 to 9 Central, 7 to 10 Eastern, 5 to 8 Mountain, 4 to 7 Pacific time. And so here we are. But what I want to cover afterwards, the title of the show today, and actually this was sent to me by a listener, it's from Mercola.com. That's Dr. Mercola. How endless boosters will destroy immune function. So I want to kind of go through this article because it is quite fascinating. But I'm going to play it a little bit now. And let me scroll down here a little bit on my notice our music started on time today, Gene. So I found the glitch there. There's always little glitches to do. I'm going to play you a different one. I'm going to play you Anti-Federalist number 7. And that'll get you set up for Federalist number 8, which I'll probably have by tomorrow. And so right back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. Insights into our founding documents. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. The more I read of the prophecy apparent in the anti-federalist papers, forecasting the end of liberty and the beginning of federal oppression, should the Constitution be ratified, the more I'm convinced the anti-federalists were right, and that a modification of the Articles of Confederation would have been the far better course for this nation over ratifying the Constitution. We might have avoided our Civil War and we might have even avoided the Marxist coup that stole our federal government with the willing cooperation of both major political parties. Anti-Federalist No. 7 was written by Philanthropus, an anonymous citizen of Virginia, and published December 6, 1787. In his opening sentences, he talks about both his time in 1787 and our time in 2021. The time in which the Constitution or government of a nation undergoes any particular change is always interesting and critical. Enemies are vigilant, allies are in suspense, friends hesitating between hope and fear, and all men are in eager expectation to see what such a change may produce. But the state of our affairs at present is of such moment as even to arouse the dead. In his time, it was whether the Constitution would be ratified and what would happen to liberty. In our time, it's what has happened to overthrow constitutional government and will it be restored. Once again, in prophecy, Philanthropus describes his time and ours. The new Constitution in its present form is calculated to produce despotism, thraldom, and confusion. And if the United States do swallow it, they will find it a bolus that will create convulsions to their utmost extremities. Were they mine enemies, the worst imprecation I could devise would be, may they adopt it. Forecasting some of our most grievous problems arising during the Constitution in force today, he said this: the Congress is having power without control to borrow money on the credit of the United States. They're having power to appoint their own salaries, and they're being paid out of the Treasury of the United States, thereby, in some measure, rendering them independent of the individual states. They're being judges of the qualification and election of their own members, which by means they can get men to suit any purpose. Philanthropus then urges the continuation of the Articles of Confederation with these words: our present Constitution, with a few additional powers to Congress, seems better calculated to preserve the rights and defend the liberties of our citizens than the one proposed, without proper amendments. Let us therefore, for once, show our judgment and solidity by continuing it and prove the opinion to be erroneous, that levity and fickleness are not only the foibles of our tempers, but the reigning principles in these states. Regarding the men who would change to the new Constitution, he says, there are men amongst us of such dissatisfied tempers that place them in heaven, they would find something to blame, and so restless and self-sufficient that they must be eternally reforming the state. But the misfortune is, they always leave affairs worse than they find them. A change of government is at all times dangerous, but at present may be fatal, without the utmost caution, just after emerging out of a tedious and expensive war. In conclusion, Philanthropus gives us a plea for caution and a warning of what might happen with the ratification of the Constitution. He was more right than he ever could have imagined. He says, in the most limited governments, what wranglings, animosities, factions, partiality, and all other evils that tend to embroil a nation and weaken a state are constantly practiced by legislators. What then may we expect if the new Constitution be adopted as it now stands? The great will struggle for power, honor, and wealth. The poor become a prey to avarice, insolence, and oppression. And while some are studying to supplant their neighbors and others striving to keep their stations, one villain will wink at the oppression of another, the people will be fleeced, and the public business neglected. From despotism and tyranny, good Lord, deliver us. Maybe it's time to review the Articles of Confederation as a potential return form of government, as a way to break the insane power and control currently exercised by a federal government supposedly limited to certain delegated powers. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Dangerously cool. Yeah, so we've got quite a bit of time today. Like I say, I haven't heard from Dave, so I don't think he'll be joining us at 7 o'clock, but hopefully he will. You never know. I mean, like I say, we're pretty informal around here. And so it's, you know, as folks get busy and do all kinds of other things in life, you know, most times they can join us, but a lot of times, you know, people can't. And that's perfectly fine, just because I'm glad to have them when we do have them. All right. So I was looking online and I'd heard something, I'll follow up on the story too, that the pilots that are taking the shots that are mandated by their airlines are actually violating FAA regulations. And I can't confirm that. That's just what I heard on the story this morning. And so I'm looking up FAA regs. I was doing a little bit of perusing during our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. And I found something actually from the FAA. And here's something I didn't know. It says, this is facts, frequently asked questions on the use of COVID-19 vaccines by pilots and air traffic controllers. And this comes right from the FAA. So this is, you know, Federal Aviation Administration, they got their seal. This is what they recommend. And I don't think this is public knowledge, but it's kind of interesting. It says what pilot duties or activities are specifically prohibited during the post-vaccination 48-hour observation period? Did you know, general public, did you know, Gene, that airline pilots cannot fly 2 days until 2 days after they've received any, quote, vaccine, GMO shot, or booster? And so they have to wait 2 days of observation. Now, if this thing is safe and effective, you know, if we're trusting the lives of tens of thousands of people to fly every day, you know, and if this is such a wonderful miracle cure for everything, why does the FAA ban flying 2 days after anybody gets a vaccine? I didn't know that until just like 20 minutes ago.
Honestly, I'm glad they're doing it for the fact that, was it you that said that they're not even having co-pilots on planes anymore?
No, I never said that.
Someone told me they weren't even supposed to have co-pilots on planes anymore.
They don't have flight engineers on airplanes anymore.
Mm. No, someone told me co-pilots. I don't remember who it was then, but
Gene, they're wrong.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because I was just like, especially with what's going on with because there are pilots dying and things happening, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
British Airways
things
lost,
do happen, you know. It's like, we never know when our last moment is.
No, that's a good thing. If you knew when your last moment was, you'd worry about it and you wouldn't do anything. You know, you'd be panicking, you know, 3 years ahead of time. It's coming. Okay, you know. It's interesting. Two people just passed away. John Madden just passed away and Harry Reid just passed away. And so John Madden, the great football coach and sports, you know, sports caster personality, and Harry Reid, the rather, you know, ignominious head of the Democrat Party for a long time. I'm a big fan of Harry Reid. But anyway, you know, I don't begrudge him anything. Harry Reid had pancreatic cancer. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. I mean, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. That's horrible. Pancreatic cancer.
It is.
I mean, you don't want this. I lost a friend of mine who was a pilot in the Experimental Aviation Association, built his own Glass Air, which is an amazingly fast, wonderful airplane. And he only had like a year or so to enjoy it. Got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and was gone within 6 months. So this can be an amazingly fast acting. So he probably had it beforehand. Yeah, that's what Patrick Swayze died of. And he was like mid-50s or something. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So you don't know. So make sure you fly your airplanes and learn to fly your helicopters and learn to climb mountains and learn to sail boats and, you know, learn how to draw and all the things, play an instrument, all those things you want to do, you know, you better start doing it now.
Don't wait.
Because you don't know. Yeah. But here's what I did say about pilots, that that an aircraft environment is unique in the work world because it's way up high, you know, 35, 45,000 feet, depending on where the airliners are flying. But they only pressurize to 8,000 feet. And most people don't know that. So 8,000 feet, that's 3,000 feet above Denver. So if you think Denver air is thin, you know, 3,000 feet above that, it's almost it's over half a mile above that up. So 35,000 feet, that's 7,000, let me see, what is it? How does it work? 5,000 feet to a mile, 5,280. So 35,000 is 7 miles up, approximately. All right. So 7 miles up, that's a long way up. You know, but and the air is really thin up there. Obviously, you can't breathe 7 miles up, so they pressurize the cabin. But they don't pressurize it to sea level. Most people don't know that. It's 8,000 feet. So you're already on reduced oxygen. That'd be something to find out. What's the partial pressure of oxygen? What's the oxygen content at 8,000 feet compared to sea level? Gene, if you have a second, if you can find that out real quickly. And then, of course, you know, back in the old days, I think pilots smoked. They don't do that anymore either. I don't think they allowed that, but that reduces your oxygen. It also cuts into your night vision because oxygen really depends. That's something we learned early in flight training is that you need oxygen for night vision. So if you're out of shape and you smoke and you drink, you know, your night vision sucks and you probably shouldn't be flying. You shouldn't be flying anyway if you do those things. But what I'm saying is all those factors, you know, if you do them at other times in your life, you know, when you do go fly, it's going to cut your night vision. And believe me, when you fly a small airplane, you want all the night vision you can get, trust me. Because we've had some interesting experiences up there. And that's when we were all, you know, young, healthy, had somewhat decent vision and went from there. Anyway, so it's an unusual environment. And the other thing is the pilots sit a lot. They sit for hours and hours and hours. I mean, they're these 14-hour flights, and they have two flight crews. So you got one crew sleeping, kind of wake up midway through the flight. Like, okay, you guys get the landing. We did the takeoff, you know. And then most of the flight's in on autopilot anyway. So they sit a lot. Well, that promotes blood clots. You know, and what do you get from the GMO shot? Blood clots. You've got an environment that's conducive to blood clots because the pilots are sitting a lot. It's a lowered oxygen thing. I don't think pilots smoke, but I'm sure there are pilots that, you know, take a drink of alcohol, you know, off duty, and that's going to lower your oxygen. All these things contribute to a lowering of oxygen, of course, if you're out of shape too. So all these things are contributing. So pilots have to be particularly careful about their health. This is why they, keep jogging and keep, you know, doing all kinds of things to keep going. But it is an unusual environment that puts more stress on the body in terms of the results of getting your COVID shot. Anyway, so it says the Federal Air Surgeon determined that FAA medical certificate holders, and you have to have a medical certificate to fly. That's the rule. That's what I'll be going for. Once I get a little thinner, I'm going to go back for my medical certificate, make sure I can pass so that I can go fly jets and things like that. Anyway, FAA medical certificate holders may not act as pilot in command. Okay, that's the boss, right? Or in any other capacity as a required flight crew member, that'll be your co-pilot, for 48 hours after each dose of the Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson vaccines. This is right from the FAA, folks. I'm not making this up. You know, says the Federal Air Surgeon made this determination after evaluation of available medical information about these COVID-19 vaccines and potential side effects. So the FAA has just admitted the COVID-19 has side effects, all right? So I don't think Dr. Fascist has heard that, but he's not talking to the FAA. But maybe we should. It says, as a result of this determination and consistent with 14 Code of Federal Regulations, Section 61.53, subparagraph A, for those of you that look into these kind of things, each person subject to Part 67, those are pilots, who receives the vaccine must wait 48 hours after each dose before acting as pilot in command or as a required flight crew member. I just find that fascinating. Gene, did you know that our pilots have to wait to have a two-day observation period after receiving a shot? I had no idea.
No, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it's not widely publicized, is it? You know, and
no,
what do you think the general
all.
Public? What happened if you walked into an airport and there's a big sign? FAA is guaranteeing that your pilots have waited 2 days after a vaccine before they're flying on your flight today. if you saw that walking into an airport, it's true. I mean, I just read it. It's right from the FAA, you know, so that's what they're doing. But how do you think the general flying public would feel if the FAA wanted to make this a PR point? And they said, just to make sure you know that your pilot has been safely sitting on the ground for 2 days after a COVID jab, you know, just to make sure they're safe to fly.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to hear that, all right. It gets worse, though. Here's the next bullet point. In the event that an FAA medical certificate holder experiences side effects after the 48-hour period has elapsed, the medical certificate holder may not act as pilot in command or in any other capacity as a required flight crew member, as described in 14 CFR Section 61.53A, for the duration of the symptoms. Oh, so here's a question for you. All right. So how many pilots are out? And this has not been talked about. So now my little journalistic antenna are like wiggling really quickly, you know, above my head. You know, so like My Favorite Martian, really date myself saying that. So now I'm thinking to myself, how many of those pilots that are out over Christmas are out because they refused the COVID shot? How many pilots are out because they have a 48-hour waiting period after the COVID shot? And how many pilots are out because they have symptoms of undetermined, you know, severity after the 48-hour waiting period, and they're sitting on the ground with symptoms of the COVID shot that the FAA is not telling us about?
Well, I thought that they weren't mandating the COVID shot anymore for pilots. Am I wrong?
I don't know. That's a good question, because the court cases keep changing. As far as I know, I don't think so. But if they're not mandating it, then why are pilots, you know, not flying? Why are the 2,000 flights
out
over Christmas?
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think they are still mandating it. Or maybe they're making – see, and it's, the weird thing is companies, they don't have to mandate. You know, they just don't schedule you. So if you refuse, you know, their COVID shot mandate, then they just don't schedule for your flight. And they'd rather cancel a flight than give in, which is kind of stupid. It's like hospitals that cut back on elective surgery or any other treatments other than COVID, you know, during the last couple of years, because they didn't have the staff. They're not going to say that, you know. They're just, well, we're kind of booked up right now, but they would rather cut staff than have people sit at home rather than lose the power of their mandate, which really is illegal anyway. I don't know. All I know is the Supreme Court's going to take it up January 6th. So we have next week. We'll find out. We'll find out for sure. But that's a good question. I'll, if you have a second to look it up, you know, feel free. I only want to do a couple more of these. I want to get into the main article I wanted for this show. It says, what duties or activities are permissible during the 48-hour post-vaccination observation period? The following duties can be performed during the 48-hour post-vaccination period. Receiving flight simulator or aviation training device instruction. Simulator sits on the ground, folks, all right? Including ground instruction, yeah, you're lecturing, or operational training not involving flight operations. So basically, during your 48-hour period, you're grounded. you cannot participate in flight. I find this fascinating. And the last one is, will the experience of individuals receiving the vaccine affect FAA guidance possible shortening of the 48-hour period, yet if additional data comes in? So they're willing to shorten the 48-hour waiting period. But considering that the CDC, because people were dying in the first 2 weeks, right, the CDC themselves, you know, said that you're not fully vaccinated until 2 weeks afterwards. So why is the CDC saying you're not fully vaccinated until 2 weeks, but the FAA says, you know, after 2 days, you know, your observation period is over? I don't know. I'm just asking the questions. Airline pilots. I'm just writing down. So I'm writing down some notes myself here. Airline pilots, and we'll go. Let's put vax mandate. It's funny how we often speak in code. I'm surprised I get the titles that I do for the shows. Today's title: Mercola.com. That got banned from Twitter. So when I tweeted out the show this morning at Action Radio, I took out the Mercola.com part and just left how endless boosters will destroy immune function. So that's what we're going to deal with now. So Twitter wouldn't let me put Mercola.com because obviously it's true. Now this article will disappear in 17 hours, 1 minute and 35 seconds. That's why I'm doing it now, so that it'll live long and prosper in our podcast, because Mercola is going to take this off. I'll take out their site. I guess they do that. They say these are fact checked. They have a whole series of things done here. The analysis is done by Joseph Mercola, so they fact check themselves, which is pretty good for me. But I'll let you determine. Let me click fact check. Yes, all Mercola articles are fact checked, vetted, and verified using Associated Press and Society of Professional Journalists journalism standards. Because we hold ourselves to the highest level of excellence and take responsibility for our work, we also follow industry best practices as recommended by the American Copy Editors Society for editing, proofing, writing, and content. So you can be sure that the evidence I'm about to give you is perfectly fine. All right.
But
so
just know, yeah, though, with him, he only keeps his stuff up for a very limited time, amount of time, mm-hmm. and then you no longer can see it again for the fact that there's been he's had so many issues. I mean, he's such mm-hmm. an awesome person to go to for information that he's had a hard time getting the information out because, you know, just what you were saying about fact checkers and all that information or all those mm-hmm. the people that believe the opposite or don't want the truth to come out. And I've always, God, this has been for over 10 years, I've followed him and have had enormous respect for what he says because, you know, it's on the up and up.
Yeah, I just discovered him recently. And so, yes, anytime you have someone that, you know, you value, let me know so that I can either, you know, invite them onto the show or at least, you know, get their material on. So because he only keeps it on now for 16 hours, 59 minutes and 53 seconds, I'm putting it on the podcast so that it will live on forever in our podcast. At least I hope they live on, you know, I don't think Block has any plans to do anything with our podcast. But the thing is, once I put it on the podcast, now it's there. Now anybody can go to it. That's why I put the website on. Oh, Mercola, yeah. So this information is going to, you know, live long and prosper because I'm going to put it right in the podcast right now. So let's go. So the article is, I'm going to do more of these because I kind of like them. December 28th, 2021, how the endless boosters will destroy immune function. Boy, I bet you didn't hear that on the news by, of course, Dr. Joseph Mercola, who says a number of medical experts, scientists, and published studies now warn that the COVID shots reprogram your immune system to respond in a dysfunctional manner. Aside from increasing vulnerability to infections, this can also result in autoimmune diseases and cancer. And that's exactly what Dr. Judy Mikovits said. Right? So, you know, we do confirm things here. So now I've heard this before from other sources. So multiple sources confirm that these things destroy your immune system, which is kind of interesting. But it makes sense because why else would the variants come about if your immune system wasn't weaker? You notice the variants aren't coming out with people who are not COVID jabbed. Okay, because we have our immune systems. So our immune systems are working. You're not creating the variants in people that haven't had the jab. You're creating variants in people that have had the jab. Well, how can people who have had the jab be producing the variants? Well, because their immune systems are compromised. That only makes sense. Okay, you don't have to believe in it. You don't have to worship at the altar of Fauci. You know, you just look at logic and reason. That's our filter here, logic and reason. It makes logical sense that the fact that they're reporting, I think last week they had one of the greatest number of cases ever of COVID, you know, during Biden's watch, as they say, and during the post, you know, vaccine availability time, there's been far more deaths, far more transmissions, far more cases. I mean, everything's been far worse in the second year with the COVID jabs than it was the year before the COVID jabs, leading me to the inescapable conclusion that the COVID jabs are the problem. And getting rid of them would go a huge way to eliminating the problem. But that goes against the Dr. Fascist narrative. All right. Pfizer shot reprograms both arms and your immune system. Listen to this. A paper post May 6, 2021 on the preprint server MedRxiv reported that the Pfizer/BioNTech COVID jab, that's the experimental one, folks. That's not comorbidity. Well, that's not how you pronounce it, but you know the one I'm talking about, the one that was approved, the one they're not producing, okay, because that one has liability attached to it. The experimental one doesn't, so that's how you're getting the experimental one for a virus that's long dead, the alpha variant, to try and fight something that has already gotten around it. Anyway, it says the COVID jab reprograms both adaptive and innate immune responses, causing immune depletion. That's why these things don't work, and this is why they get weaker over a very short period of time. This is why they keep pushing the boosters. Because these things aren't working. And this is why it's fascinating, you know, the amount of people that are ending up in the hospital that are, quote, vaccinated. Oh, fully vaccinated. I've heard some fully vaccinated before this. It used to be just vaccinated. Now it becomes fully vaccinated. Oh, my. Back to the article. While they confirmed the jab induced effective humoral and cellular immunity against several SARS-CoV-2 variants, the shot also, and this is the key part, modulated the production of inflammatory cytokines. Ever heard of a cytokine storm? Okay, cytokines by innate immune cells upon stimulation with both specific SARS-CoV-2 and nonspecific viral, fungal, and bacterial stimuli. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it doesn't sound good. So let me read on. In other words, thank you. We're looking at a horrible trade-off. It says, you may get some protection against SARS-CoV-2 and its variants, but you're weakening your overall immune function, which opens the door wide to all sorts of other health problems from bacterial, fungal, and viral infections to cancer and autoimmunity. So that's self-immune. That means your body consumes itself, all right? I think autoimmunity, correct me if I'm wrong, Gene, but isn't autoimmunity like lupus and those kind of things? That's where your body thinks that your body is the problem, and it actually has an immune reaction against yourself. Isn't that what autoimmune means? Self-immunity?
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are things that are good. Bacterial. Ever hear of staph infections, folks? Flesh-eating bacteria? Okay, you don't like bacteria bad. You know, the ones in your stomach are good. So eat your yogurt and build up your probiotic, build up your good bacterial. Fungal? Funguses can kill all kinds of things. Viral? Well, this is a viral infection. COVID is a virus. The cold is a virus. Flu is a virus. So is Ebola and a bunch of other nasty things we went over a few weeks ago. Gee, what did you think of that show we did on the 50 most infectious diseases out there, none of which was COVID? COVID wasn't even on the list.
It was very interesting, very, very enlightening, yes.
Yeah, the things we cover here. All right, so anyway, so if you're getting your COVID jab, you're making a trade-off. Yes, you're getting a little bit of protection, I guess they're saying, from SARS-CoV-2, which has a 99.95 average percent, you know, won't affect you severely, but we are trading off lowering your immune system. And this is the problem with the flu vaccine, because I remember my work on goes back to WBY. I did shows on Gulf War syndrome and squalene, which is the adjuvant, and an adjuvant is like the rocket fuel in a vaccine to make it more effective, and it's very cheap. And instead of making more vaccine, they just make more adjuvant, and it's kind of like a jumpstart thing. And so what squalene is rumored to have done is caused Gulf War syndrome. Well, squalene's in your flu shots. So if you find elderly folks getting sick from the symptoms of Gulf War syndrome, it's probably the same squalene that they had in the flu and the anthrax shots that gave our soldiers, you know, Gulf War syndrome, because it's the same chemical. You know, and it's still in the flu shot, as far as I know. And if it's in the COVID shots, there's another problem. All right. Anyway, so let me go here. It says after the injection, innate immune cells had a markedly decreased response to toll-like receptors for elastin. I'm going to skip that part. It's like he gives a technical thing and then he spells out it in English. He says people who were, quote, fully vaccinated, having received two doses of the Pfizer shot, also produce significantly less interferon upon stimulation, and this can hamper the initial innate immune response against the virus. Interferon. That's good stuff, right? What's interferon? That interferes with viruses, doesn't it? Doing a gene bank here.
I think so. Let me look.
Okay, interferon. Interferon.
Yeah.
I shall continue reading. We'll see what we find here. And this is repeated vaccinations and the risk of autoimmunity, okay? Pathogenic infections and cancer are but two potential outcomes of this kind of reprogramming. Now, I've heard this before. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just get it to say it. Interferons are a group of signaling proteins made and released by host cells in response to the presence of several viruses. Okay, so in a typical scenario, a virus-infected cell will release interferon, causing nearby cells to heighten their antiviral defenses.
Oh, so it's like a warning signal.
I think it just kind of helps protect against and fight what you don't want in there, the virus.
So if a cell gets infected with a virus, then that cell puts out a warning, help. It's like a distress signal. You know, interfere with this. And then the other cells go, oh, we've got an invader. Let's go get him.
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, but Judy Mikovits told us about this too, that, and I've read this in other places too, that what happens with the COVID jab is that in order for it to take root, in order for your body to accept the messenger RNA to reprogram your DNA, in order to accept the turning your body into a COVID factory, which is what this messenger RNA does. So it teaches your body how to make COVID, and then at some point your body says, oh, I've made COVID. Let's go after it. So that when other COVID shows up, it's going to you're going to have your immune system will be ready for it. Well, the problem is, A, millions of people have already had COVID. What do they figure, 150-some-odd million have already had something, many of which didn't even know it. You know, and so why would you turn off someone's immunity to the thing that they're already immune to naturally? That's illogical. That's irrational. But yet that's what they're doing. All right, so let's get to the scene. Pathogenic infections in cancer are two pigeons. All right, here we go. Previous research, for example, has linked defects in the immune system to a higher risk of autoimmune diseases. What's more, it's been shown that antigens in vaccines specifically can induce this kind of immune system dysfunction. And here we go. As reported in a paper in question, they said repeated immunization with antigen causes systemic autoimmunity in mice, otherwise not prone to spontaneous autoimmune diseases. Then they get more technical with more chemicals, so let's skip that. Let's go here. So fast forward to mid-May 2021, okay? Well, last year. When a study in the Journal of Clinical Investigations reported that SARS-CoV-2 mRNA vaccines induced broad CD4+ T-cell responses, I'm not sure what that is, that's more of the technical stuff above, that recognized SARS-CoV-2 variants and HCoV-NL63. I don't even know what that is. It's a human coronavirus associated with a common cold. All right, so there you go. So now this is interesting, okay? This is where it gets fun, right? So SARS-CoV-2 mRNA, that's SARS-CoV-2. That's what we know as COVID-19. Well, HCoV-NL63 is almost the same kind of thing. So, and that's the cold virus. So the coronavirus formula and the COVID formula, SARS-CoV-2 versus HCoV-NL63, are damn near the same. I found that interesting. Pianki, I see you there. I'll get you in just a second. This is interestingly, we observed a threefold increase in CD4 T-cell responses to HCoV-NL63, that's the cold virus, spike peptides after vaccination. The author stated, adding, our results suggest that T-cell responses elicited or enhanced by SARS-CoV-2 mRNA vaccines may be able to control SARS-CoV-2 variants and lead to cross-protection against some endemic coronaviruses. So this is like a little bit of protection, but the trade-off is huge. So what they did not address is whether the excessive CD4A plus T-cell responses could also result in development of autoantibodies and autoimmune disease. And the next headline is COVID shots may also cause more hazardous variants. And I'll get to that in just a second. Let's get Pianki on the line and see what she thinks so far. Pianki, how you doing with our discussion so far? Good morning.
It's always great to listen to the sound of music. Gene and Greg. And
good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
You know, you made mention about when a cell sends out a signal because mm-hmm. it's in distress. Well, unless that signal is encrypted, parasites would pick it up, and they would go and start attacking that cell. Matter of fact, if you got an organ, liver, kidney, lung, if they are having distress and they're fighting off a pending enemy from the east, the parasite would come around them from the west and attack that organ from the backside and do harm to it. Greg, parasites has been around since the beginning, and they're intelligent. And when you put in your body something that's designed like cloves, walnut extract to kill certain parasites, they would actually run from it and hide in your body.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is. People don't know about those things. And
well,
I think
if people knew it was in their bodies, you know, people knew that we had bacteria and you know, I don't know if everybody has worms, but a good portion of the human population has some kind of worm in them, you know, and for the most part, we live our lives, you know, river blindness, isn't that a worm that gets into your brain, the one that ivermectin cures? You know, so there are amoebas. We went over. In fact, I was just talking to Gene about the 50, you know, most deadly diseases. One of which was a brain eating amoeba. You know, so you know, these horrible things are out there, and for the most part, you can get rid of them. There are drugs that take care of, like the parasites that we have in our even freshwater in North America. There are parasites and amoebas and really nasty things in our, you know, our river water. Seawater has other problems like salt, but the river water has all kinds of crap in there, and this is why they boil it. There's stuff there. What's that?
It's dangerous to put your feet in river water. I put my feet in the Nile River.
Well, there you go.
And I think somebody else with me. And I think a leg swole up, but that hasn't been determined. But there's good bacteria, too, now. Then there's bacteria that sat down at the negotiation table, didn't like what was being negotiated, so it got out, got up, and it aligned with other bacteria to fight against other bacteria.
Oh, yeah. Same thing with viruses. Viruses are parasites and other viruses. Now, a parasite, in order to survive, it lives off the host, but it can't kill the host, so the parasite will die too. So they're not stupid about this. They'll weaken you, but they won't actually – but if you get too many of them, of course, they'll kill you. But, I mean, like I say, there's bacteria. There's flesh-eating bacteria. There's staph infections. There's some nasty bacteria out there. There's a war going on in our bodies all the time. Between all these little microbes and things. And people don't realize
that's what I said.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I said a long time ago. There's a war going on in your body. There's the micro war, and then there's the macro war.
Yep. Unfortunately, eventually we're going to lose. That's the sad part. But for we fight the good fight as long as we can. Yeah. But sooner or later, yeah.
The macro war. Mm-hmm. The macro war, your China, your Russia, your Ukraine.
Yep.
The micro war is your COVID, your staph infection, your brain infection.
Mm-hmm. And what do those two wars have in common? What do those two wars have in common?
They're trying to kill you.
No, government. Governments get into wars in Ukraine and Russia and World War II and all those things. Governments impose vaccine mandates, which cause variants and lockdowns and masks and all the horrible things going on. Government is the connector between the micro and the macro war. And yes, they're both trying to kill
you. Well, human beings are kind of like the Borg, you know, the Borg in Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, resistance is futile. Yeah. Anyway, on that happy note, COVID shots may also cause more hazardous variants. We only have 16 hours, 44 minutes, and 6 seconds left of this article, so I want to put it on podcast. We've long known that leaky or non-sterilizing vaccines can trigger the evolution of more hazardous viruses. So far, SARS-CoV-2 variants have mutated into less dangerous versions, which is fortunate, but the risk of the COVID shots creating a monster still remains. In a February 9th, 2021 article, NPR, that's National Socialist Radio, for those that don't like acronyms, highlighted this risk, stating that vaccines could drive the evolution of more COVID-19 mutants. I like the word mutant. See, they use variant because people understand what a mutant is. A mutant's a dangerous thing, right? People don't want mutants running around, but they don't mind variants running around, even though they're the same thing. See, language. Language is everything. According to National Socialist Radio, science correspondent Richard Harris, not the actor, the virus is always mutating. And if one happens to produce a mutation that makes it less vulnerable to the vaccine, that virus could simply multiply in a vaccinated individual, proving once again the thing we've been saying for at least the last year, that it's the COVID shots that are causing the variants, because it's the fact of the viruses going around the COVID shot that actually creates the variant. See, the mutations can't go around an individual that doesn't have a COVID shot because there's nothing to go against except the entire immune system, which is geared up to fight it, whatever form it comes in. That's the difference between natural immunity and your artificially bought, store-bought COVID injection, which is only good for the alpha variant, which died out last year. Hence, variants. Back to the article. The Omicron variant appears to have significant resistance against antibodies produced by the original COVID shots. What a friggin' surprise, okay? Which is why the Omicron infection is being primarily reported in those who have received the injections. Any questions, ladies and gentlemen? Hearing none, I'll continue on. In 2018, Quanta magazine detailed how vaccines drive the evolution of pathogens. I've referenced that article, this is Dr. Mercola, that article on previous occasions, as have many others. In response, the editor of Quanta magazine added a, quote, disclaimer dated December 6, 2021 to the article stating, this article from 2018 discusses how leaky vaccines that do not reduce viral replication or transmission to others, can drive the pathogens they target to evolve and become more virulent. These concerns do not apply to COVID-19 vaccines, however. Sorry, because COVID-19 vaccines significantly reduce coronavirus replication and transmission, reducing the chance that mutations occur and variants arise. So this guy just said that what we know to be true, that the variants arising in the vaccinated isn't really happening. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I'll tell you what the truth is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Isn't this amazing? Pianchi, what do you think? What does this idiot think we are, idiots? But we can't observe for ourselves that, COVID drastically increased once the vaccines came out. I mean, we're not stupid. And then Dr. Mercola's. Go ahead, Pianchi.
Sounds like a conspiracy to me. What about Gene?
Yeah, Gene, what do you think? Government conspiracy or what?
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. Crazy.
Oh, there's more. And, of course, Dr. Mercola says that statement is clearly false. Yeah, no, you know what. His studies have repeatedly shown that COVID shots are, in fact, leaky. I never really understood what leaky was, but leaky, I guess, where's that definition of leaky? We had it up here. COVID shots are leaky. I guess leaky means it produces mutations. I guess it's not leaky. It doesn't produce mutations. Okay. It says the statement is clearly false, as studies have repeatedly shown that COVID shots are, in fact, leaky. Gene, if you can look up the definition of a leaky vaccine for me, please. I want to make sure we get that clarified for everybody. He says they do not significantly reduce viral replication or transmission, as the editor claims. Quite the opposite. Yeah, that's why all the people in the hospitals right now have been, quote, fully vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Back to the article. People who have received one or more COVID shots have been found to harbor higher viral loads than the unvaccinated. So
hey, Greg,
just contradicts. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, excuse me. What did you want me to look up? Leaky what?
Leaky vaccine. So L-E-A-K-Y.
That's what I thought you said, but I just like, I don't know, never heard of that.
I know what it means, but I don't want to speculate on the show because we got too many people who listen and we want to be accurate. So let's find out what leaky vaccine is. But think about this here. It says people who have received one or more COVID shots have been found to harbor higher viral loads, which means not only is the COVID shot not stopping you from getting the virus, it's actually increasing the virus in your body. Tell me that's a good thing. You know, it says higher viral loads, let me slow down, Greg, higher viral loads than the unvaccinated. In other words, the DNA healthy. And Israel, which appears to have the best tracking and monitoring, reports that the worst COVID cases are in those who are fully vaxxed. Let me say that again. Israel reports that the worst COVID cases are in those who are fully vaxxed. But yeah, you didn't hear that coming out of Dr. Fascist, genocidal vaccine, psychopathic, narcissistic drug pusher. I got that wrong, but I'll do it again later.
Okay, I got a definition of it.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, leaky vaccines promote the transmissions of more virulent virus.
It's in other words, they create mutations. Okay,
yeah.
Good. That's basically what we're saying. All right. So they use these weird terms to kind of couch what they really mean. In other words, they don't call them mutants. They call them variants. Well, variant sounds very nice. Well, it's just a variant. It's a variation. You know, it's a mutant. Okay. So for now, I'm going to call these things mutant. It's the mutant Omicron or Omicron mutant. Which do you think sounds better? It's the Delta mutant. You know, it's like Delta zombie.
Here, let me give you what this says. Leaky vaccines are those for which vaccination
reduces. Gene, you're breaking up.
Opposed to all or none vaccines. I know, it's like.
You just broke up in
the
whole definition.
Too early in the morning. Okay, let me do it again. Yeah. Leaky vaccines are those for which vaccine-induced protein reduces infection rates on a per exposure basis, as exposed to an all or none vaccine, which reduced infection rates to zero for some fraction of subjects.
That's what
leaky
vaccine
is? Yeah, so they say, therefore, leaky vaccines protect subjects with fewer exposures at a higher effective rate than subjects with more exposures.
Oh, so the vaccine degrades the more you're. So the vaccine, in other words, it loses potency as it has to work. So each time you're exposed to COVID, it becomes weaker. Whereas your immune system, your natural immunity, becomes stronger with each exposure to COVID.
Interesting. Oh. I did not know that.
I didn't either. That's why we do these things. Pianki, did you know that? This is fascinating.
Very interesting,
He's thinking, All right, let me continue on here. And Pierre, feel free to jump in anytime. See, we don't have a hotel bell for our guests. Gene, you always have it. You can feel free to use that. For those, those that don't know the hotel bell, we have a little signal I created. There's the unobtrusive signal.
What you
signal.
Just said only makes sense.
Oh, thank you.
Oil in your engine. The longer you use it, the weaker it gets. So you have to change it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And actually, it's the additives that break down first in your oil. The oil actually lasts a fair while, but the additives are the things that really make the protecting factors work. Yeah, so that's why you change your oil, because it breaks down. Well, apparently the vaccine breaks down the more you use it against exposure to COVID. Anyway, so if you hear this sound here, try it again one more time. that's the nice way of Gene and I talking to each other to get our attention when either of us is on a roll. So that's the phone. Now the gong is the loud way of getting our attention. I'm not gonna play that now. Gene hates the gong. In fact, if Gene gets her own show one day, I'll tell you the first thing Gene's not gonna do. Gene's not putting a gong on her audio, you know, soundboard. I'll tell you right now, you'll never hear it.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, even if I anticipate it coming, it's kind of like it gives me a jolt every time I hear it.
Well, it's supposed to. I mean, I have the volume turned way up on it. What that came about, the Chinese gong, well, because I have to play it now because people are like, what the hell is the Chinese gong, Greg? All right. So yeah. Brace yourself, Gene. Brace yourself. Yeah. Lock down. You know, hold on. But the reason for the Chinese gong is every once in a while we get arguments here that are so loud I can't interrupt the combatants. And so I thought, well, I need something that's going to attract people's attention, something different. And so I found this in my soundtracks. Well, that thing really lingers, doesn't it?
It does. And in other words, it's just a way for me to take a breath. So, but yeah, it's interesting how it's like, yeah, it gets me every time. It's like, oh, yeah.
Well, here's the funny thing, though. The damn thing works.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, remind me of that movie that Yul Brynner played in. I think it was The King of Siam or something like that.
Oh, The King and I? Yeah. I hated that musical because you've got this upstart, you know, British woman teacher completely destroying the King of Siam and turning him into this mush-brained metrosexual. You know, I hate the premise of that show. It's the only one of the Rodgers and Hammersteins that I really can't stand. And it's based on Anna and the King. And it's probably a true story. I think she was the British schoolmarm, and I think the King was trying to update his country. And so the real story is actually pretty good. I mean, you had the King of Siam, you know, which became Thailand, was trying to modernize, you know, rather quickly. So he brought in an English school teacher to teach him the ways of the West. But what these guys turned this into is that he looks like this weak wimp, and that the little British school teacher who knows better than the King of Siam is basically running the country. It's horribly insulting. You know, you want to talk about, you know, racism, cultural appropriation, and things like that. That show is it. And it's always bothered me because of that. Anyway, see what you got me started on, Pianki? Oh, so we do the King and all this from a gong. All right. Back to Mercola.com. This article now has only 16 hours, 33 minutes, and 24 seconds left. 23, 22. So I'll keep going. COVID shots stop working within a few months. This is the other big thing, too. This is why the boosters, okay? Why would you need a booster if your body's been taught how to make, you know, antibodies or to COVID? I mean, it doesn't make sense that you would need to continually have boosters. Why would you need boosters if this thing works? Well, obviously it doesn't work, and that's why you need boosters. And if it doesn't work, why are you getting boosters? Why aren't we doing something else? Why aren't we looking at alternatives to you know, it's like if the oil in your car only lasted for 100 miles and you had to change it every 100 miles, wouldn't you look for new oil? Pianki, I would. I mean, 3,000 miles I can handle. 100 miles? What if your oil is good for 100 miles? Would you buy that oil? He's thinking. He's muted. He's probably making coffee.
No, my telephone has popped up something different, like a lock whenever the screen blinks. So I got to mess with it.
Yeah, we understand technical difficulties.
That's why they have synthetic oil, I guess, so that they supposedly last a lifetime.
Yeah, but you wouldn't buy oil that only lasted 100 miles. You'd be in the shop every other day, especially if you do any kind of commuting.
Yes, I would.
Yeah. So anyway, but that's my instant analogy here. So back to the article. COVID shots stop working within a few months. A study in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is well known to promote fraudulent studies like their hydroxychloroquine thing. That's my addition. That's not in the article. I just said that. New England Journal of Medicine, published December 9th, 2021, also confirms that whatever protection you get from the Pfizer COVID shot is short in duration, as explained by the authors. So that's interesting. In December 2020, Israel's fascinating for what's going on. You know, modern Western country, so you can't really accuse them of lying and sound like Iran, you know. So when they report stuff, it's fascinating. It's one of the most vaccinated countries in the world and having some of the worst problems. Gee, do you think there's a connection, a correlation, per chance? Back to the article. In December 2020, Israel began a mass vaccination campaign against coronavirus disease, 2019, in other words, COVID-19, by administering the BNT162 small case B vaccine, which I've never heard of, which led to a sharp curtailing of the outbreak. after a period of almost no cases of severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus, well, is that what they call it? Severe acute respiratory syndrome, that's SARS, okay, for those of you that want a quick translation. SARS coronavirus 2, in other words, SARS-CoV-2 infection, a resurgent COVID-19 outbreak began in mid-June 2021, okay? This is when we thought it ended. You know, I was calling July 4th, oh, no, excuse me, 2020. So mid-June 2021, so it's back. So in other words, the vaccine brought it back. Back to the article. Possible reasons for the resurgence were reduced vaccine effectiveness against the Delta variant and waning immunity. We used data on confirmed infection and severe disease collected from an Israeli national database for the period July 11th to 31st, 2021, for all Israeli residents who had been fully vaccinated before June 2021. We use among persons 60 years of age and older, the rate of infection in July 11 to 31 period was higher among persons who became fully vaccinated in January 2021 when they were first eligible than among those fully vaccinated 2 months later, proving that the stuff gets, you know, the stuff wears off. And it says among persons 40 to 59 years of age, the rate ratio for infection among those fully vaccinated in February when they were eligible, as compared with 2 months later, in April, was 1.7. Among persons 60 and 39 years, ratio for infection among fully vaccinated to those who weren't was 1.6. So it's almost twice as many people, you know, are picking up this stuff than the people who don't get the shot. The rate ratio for severe disease among persons fully vaccinated in the month when they were first eligible, as compared with those fully vaccinated in March, was 1.8. That's almost two. Among persons, okay, anyway. This is two doses aren't enough. This is earlier this year, vaccine makers and health authorities said the shots were about 95% effective. And if people get enough shot, people got the shots, normalcy would be restored. Remember that? Get your normal life back. We can get the new normal. We can return to the old normal. Just take a shot. Yeah. He says, we now know that was a false promise. The goal post was moved back with the emergence of the Delta and then Omicron, for which we're now told we need a third booster. Well, that'd make five shots. Third booster, that's five shots, okay? So you get two regular shots of your Pfizer, and you get this is something I started doing today because it amuses me. And then you get two boosters on top of that. That's five shots, right? December 13, 2021, Reuters reported that British scientists have concluded that two-dose COVID-19 vaccine regimens do not induce enough neutralizing antibodies against the Omicron coronavirus variant, and that increased infections in those previously infected or vaccinated may be likely, okay? Let's get to the infamous Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic vaccine drug pusher of the NIH. That was me, not the article. The article says, when in mid-December 2021, Dr. Anthony Fauci was asked if Americans should expect annual COVID boosters, he replied in the affirmative, which is his way of saying yes, saying that Americans will just have to deal with the prospect of getting boosters at regular intervals. Just have to deal with? He's the same guy that said that your freedoms don't count. That my public interest is more important than your freedoms. He actually said that. Well, he didn't say mine, your. That's basically what he said. He says the public interest outweighs, you know, individual rights, constitutional rights. You just have to, you know, deal with it. So in essence, Fauci wants us to accept that booster deficiency is the reason why COVID-19 pandemic continues. Oh, that's interesting. Clearly, that is not the case. So the real reason COVID is still an issue is because Fauci and the medical establishment have suppressed viable early treatments. If early treatment was the norm, COVID would rapidly become a distant memory. Yeah, if early treatment was the norm, if we went by Dr. Dieter Raoult and went by Dr. Zelenko and Dr. Peter McCullough and the guys that they've had on One American News and Dr. Simone Gold, Dr. Stella Emanuel, you know, all the folks have been saying for, you know, since this whole thing began, early treatment works, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, this would have been done with in about 3 months. So it started in January of 2020, peaked April 15th, tax day, rather ironic, and was headed for zero as of July 4th. And then they started doing things. And surprise, surprise, it came back. So the government has saved COVID at least four times. Huh. As predicted over a year ago, we're now on an injection treadmill with no end in sight. And every single dose carries the risk of serious side effects, up to and including permanent disability and death. The only scientifically sound way out of this failed experiment is to stop. No more boosters. And that's a quote. I believe that's Dr. Mercola. Here we go. Back to the article again. It says, instead, the captured U.S. Food and Drug Administration granted emergency use authorization to novel gene transfer technologies that don't work like conventional vaccines. That's what your COVID shot is. It's a messenger RNA. Here you go. Novel gene transfer technology. And you know what people say it doesn't alter your DNA? By definition, gene transfer alters your DNA. Okay, novel gene transfer technologies that don't work like conventional vaccines in that they don't prevent infection and spread, thus creating an evil cycle of new vaccine-resistant variants, as demonstrated by James Lyons Weller in a now broken web link, so you can find it. Sorry, folks. The more we vaccinate, the higher the COVID caseload. Let me say that again. The more we vaccinate, the higher the COVID caseload. Mark, what's his name, from New York? Austin, from Texas. Mark, what's his name? Mark, he fills in for people all the time. Not Mark Stein. He's a Canadian guy. Anyway, I'll think of his name. All right, so there you go. So there's the, in essence, that's the problem. The higher, you know, the more we vaccinate, the higher the COVID caseload. Let's see if I know. Let's see, we've got to, well, this graph looks like, I think it's pretty much all I wanted to read. Oh, here we go. As predicted, over a year ago, we're now on an injection treadmill with no end in sight. And every single dose carries the risk. Oh, that's what you just said. Fortunately, it seems most Americans are starting to catch on. And so far, the fear-mongering among Omicron has not resulted in a rush of boosters. Yeah, people are sick of this. I'd be curious to know what the injection rate is for these days. You know, gee, I don't know if you can find that. How many people have one shot? How many people have two shots? How many people have a booster? How many people have a booster for Omicron? I don't know if they list that anywhere. But if you have a chance, a couple of minutes, I'd be curious just to, you know, just look up, you know, rates of vaccination per shot or something like that, or per vaccine or per dose. Something that probably gives us some interesting information. Anyway, among respondents who already have received one or more doses, 59% said Omicron makes no difference in their decision to get a third dose. 36% said it makes them more likely, and 5% said it makes them less likely to get it. Okay. Considering the shots, just the last paragraph, right? Well, here you go. Considering the shots have been shown to deregulate your immune function, it would be wise to just say no to further boosters. Should you develop symptoms of SARS-CoV-2 infection, remember, there are safe and effective early treatment protocols, including the iMask Plus. I'm not sure what that is. The iMask Plus protocols. The mask doesn't mean mask. It's M-A-S-K, whatever that is, which are available for download on the COVID Critical Care website in multiple languages. Well, here we go. Other great successes, AAPS protocol, Tess Lowry's World Council for Health protocol, America's Frontline Doctors, Dr. Peter McCullough's Ambulatory Treatment of COVID-19, and, of course, my favorite person is a friend of mine, Dr. Zelenko at VladimirZelenkoMD.com. That's about that. Questions? Comments? Dear friends?
Hey, Greg, the first thing I found was 74% of the population has received at least one dose.
Okay.
63% of the population has been fully vaccinated, and I'm still looking about the booster, but yeah.
So a certain percentage of the population, this is what I wanted to find out. So as I've heard, a certain percentage, they get the first shot and they say, oh, damn, this is awful. I'm not going to do this again. And then a certain percentage go back for a second. And then a percentage of those says, I'm not doing this again. And then a smaller percentage goes for the booster. My guess is that it's diminishing. Each time they try and create something new, fewer and fewer people are getting it. That's my guess.
Yeah, they're dying off.
They're dying off? Yeah, I hope not. Well, here's the interesting stat.
Yeah, they are. A lot of them are dying off. Just ain't hearing about it.
Well, here's something interesting. That if you look at, and we've talked about this before, the CDC says only about 5% of the people who get COVID actually die from COVID as opposed to those who die with it. So if you take 5% of the 800,000, that's 40,000 people.
Okay,
now, a lot
right.
of people report, yeah. Hold, let me just
Sorry.
Let me just do this quick. All right, go ahead. I'll start it again.
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
This one says 58% of Americans have been fully vaccinated. And then it says 4% have received additional dose. You know, so that would be the boosters. But let me see when that was. That was through late October. So
So is that 4% of 53% or 4% of the country?
Yeah. It would have to be 4%. Or it says 4% of Americans have received the additional dose.
4%? That's it?
4%. That's what it's, but that was as of October. Let me see. Okay. Here
How long has the booster been out? Okay.
This for a little while. But this one says as of December 19th, it says more than 60.2 million booster doses have been administered across the country. About 30% of the fully vaccinated, so that's That's enough for about 30% of the fully vaccinated U.S. population.
So
well,
30% of the
thing.
And here it says 23% of vaccinated adults said they have had their booster.
So that's 33%.
So of those that were vaccinated, because you can't get the booster until you have the other vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I'm trying to make sense of this in my head because I don't do well with numbers.
So in other words, who really knows?
So wait a minute. So Pianki, hold on to your question. I want to get to it. So the first number you gave was, I'm going to start writing these down. So 65%, 61% were vaccinated first time?
No, oh God, now I don't even have that information because I had to change
let's say
screen.
60. All right, let's just
I think
say 65%. So 68%?
5-8.
Yeah, it was more than that. Yeah, let me get back. Let me see if I can find it again quick.
Okay, because I want to write down because what it.
Yeah, because it was a pretty high number.
So what we're saying is 30% of 50%. So in other words, like 20% of the population total. What I'm getting at is that fewer and fewer people are going for this.
Well, yes, fewer and fewer people are going for this, and also what happened to the idea that they had bodies stacked up like cordwood because they didn't have no place to do it. And what happened to that incident? You got more people, have died, 2 or 3 times more people have died since the number of deaths when he was complaining about morgues had no place to do with the bodies.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Well, that's because Trump was in office. See, the Trump report is people are dying in the streets. The bodies are being stacked up. You know, it's and which is fascinating because 2020 the death rate was actually lower than 2019 overall death rate. So this pandemic killed all these hundreds of thousands of people. Why did the death rate go down? Unless we all got healthier and something else. But it's interesting that the hospitals were packed. The lines for the emergency room were around three blocks around the corner. The ambulances were full. And these horrible things were happening during the Trump administration when fewer people died from COVID than during the Biden insurrection when a lot more people have died of COVID and the hospitals are empty, the emergency rooms are doing just fine, and the bodies are not being stacked up like cordwood. For those of you who know what cordwood is. Yeah, so this is all perception. So it's all a lie. It was always a lie. Most of the stuff about this is a lie.
Yeah, refrigerated trucks all over the place. Where it is?
Exactly. Wait a minute. Where are the lines out of the hospitals? There are more people dying of COVID today because they're vaccinated, but there are more people dying of COVID or either from or with COVID today than there were during the Trump administration. But almost like twice as much. So where are the stories?
Where's the medical ships offshore?
Checkpoints. Where's the people sticking the swab up your nose, just to go to work, wearing hazmat suits, where's all that?
One says, so as of November 17th, 68.7% of the U.S. population has received at least one dose of the vaccine.
Okay, 68 for one.
Yeah, I think it was the first article. Let's just use
a rough figure. So let's say 68. So it's about 45% have received two. Got two shots. And then you said 30% of the people that have shots have two shots because you got to have two shots before you get a booster.
This article says with 58% of Americans fully vaccinated. So who knows how many people are really vaccinated? This article says 58% are fully vaccinated and 4% of Americans have received additional dose.
Well, let's just make it easy. So let's say 60% of people have had two shots.
Okay.
Just to me. So 60% have had two shots and 4% of those.
That surprises me. I would have thought it was higher just because, I guess I don't. I know some people that have got the booster, put it that way, but I know more people that got the two COVID shots or the Johnson & Johnson one shot, and they're not sure if they're going to get the booster or not, or they haven't so far.
Interesting. Okay. Well, but if it's, let's say 4% of 60, 10% of 60 would be 6. 5% would be 3. So what we're looking at is of the overall population, it's like less than 3% of the people have gotten the boosters. That's not a lot of people. No wonder they're all panicking with the mandates. Now, here's the next question is how soon after the boosters came out, once they realized nobody was getting them, they start mandating. You know, we're getting probably in the trivial here. I'm going to take another break here in a minute, and I want to come up with some – I got a few totally different topics. I've got a great article on Ukraine, why we shouldn't go there, and why our military sucks right now because of political correctness and the woke joke. And I've got – what else have I got here? I've got some political stuff. The Army's making a vaccine. I'll say that. We've had enough vaccines, I think. But Gateway Pundit's got something on Epps. We got Ted Cruz, you know, selling out conservatives to get a bunch of liberal judges all for sanctions. And we got the man who wore underwear on his face instead of a face mask. My favorite story of the week. On that note, Pianki, Gene, do you have another comment before we go? Anything you want to say further on this? I think we've pretty much covered. Thanks for your research, too, Gene. Appreciate it.
No, not right now.
Okay.
So well, it just goes that we don't know anything.
Well, I think we know, but others don't want to believe that we know.
Yeah.
Those the ones, the 58, those the 42%.
Right.
Okay, I think I'll tell you about the Pennsylvania court, which okays inspection of Dominion voting machines. Then I got a great article on Ukraine from Doug McGregor, who's been on our show a few times. I'd like to get him back. And after that, I'll figure out what to do from there. So we're open. Anything you want to discuss, if you guys want to break into a big discussion, that's okay too. So for the rest of the show, we've got another hour and 15 minutes. Pretty much going to be free for all. So I want to play, once again, my other big Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, the one on church and state. And, of course, that's very applicable this time of year being Christmas time. And so I'll play that for you. Be back in a little bit. And we'll continue with all the fun and frolic of Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there, or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state. But they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptist that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda, or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate, opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and it has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. Religious tests for office remained in place in most states, and Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. The Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state, as in government in general, but the individual states, establish their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause. What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so, we had religious freedom at the federal level, but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptists wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptists, believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state. Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation of which Jefferson spoke only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, it's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state-established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptists from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Cool. All right, we're back here, and we have another hour and, 8 minutes? So good time for you to call in if you haven't called us before. I imagine a lot of people are on vacation this week thinking that, there are no live talk shows. We're live. Okay, this is real. It's happening right now. So 215-383-3832 if you want to talk about anything in particular. I'm going to throw it open to Gene, first of all. And then I got something interesting that was just texted into me, which is kind of fascinating. But, Gene, you wanted to say something before we take our break.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about, like the information I was given before, and I was on DuckDuckGo. So it's like, really, where do you go to get the most, I don't want to even say up to date, but most accurate information? Because it's interesting, the CDC, you can't really believe them. that, you know, Fauci, you sure can't believe him because he never, I mean, I don't even see how he can even be considered credible by anybody's standard. And so it's like, and granted, I know like in a pandemic or with the COVID, things do change based on the information they get. But the bottom line is this, a lot of the decisions made, I think were made before the COVID even came around. I think this was a planned thing, and just based on everything, you know, and it's just really interesting. So I don't know who to believe, who to listen to. And then another thing is yesterday I was listening to something about, you know, why they think Trump is touting the vaccine and stuff like that. But the interesting thing is, there's so many people trying to rationalize things out there, and it is hard to know who to listen to, who to believe, who to go to for information, because, you know, like we said earlier, it's like people need to find out the information, dig. But for some people, do they want to spend so much time digging to read through the muck? Okay, and we shouldn't be so cynical to say, okay, yep, this is credible. No, this is not.
Well, it's my basic formula is logic and reason plus multiple sources. You know, that's how I do it. And the best way to find the most accurate information is to ask the right questions. And this is what we talked about the other day in terms of being a news advocate, being, you know, and the people on the journalism sites, they have to start being news advocates, especially conservative news advocates, with advocating, you know, solutions to the problems. And a lot of those problems are going to be solved by what we do here at Action Radio in terms of our citizen legislation. But my favorite example is just what happened, and it happened purely by accident, you know, back in February of 2020 when I put, you know, three-word question into my DuckDuckGo search engine, what kills viruses? Because no one was talking about that. All they were talking about was getting a vaccine. I mean, Dr. Fauci had already, you know, cornered the media market for himself, and I'm not sure how he did that, but he did. I think it came out of the Event 201 planning. So let me just do, I've got a whole vaccine timeline, but just off the top of my head, let me see if I can kind of structure this. Initially, it started back with the Buy Something Dole Act, as Bob Dole, who just passed away, back in the 70s, which allowed government people to make money off their inventions. And then we could fast forward to, the 80s, when I think of one of the coronaviruses, Fauci knew that hydroxychloroquine killed that virus back in the 80s. And then we fast forward to, I think, 2005, I think he learned that it killed, that hydroxychloroquine killed SARS-CoV-1, for example. And then we get to 2010. That's when Moderna was created to create messenger RNA vaccines. So the vaccine came long before COVID. COVID was engineered to the vaccine, not the other way around. The vaccine was not engineered to COVID. So Moderna had been working on this problem, probably on coronaviruses, since 2010. So we know it takes about 10 years to create a vaccine, right? And so from 2010 to 2020, when COVID was released on the world, actually 2019, there's your 10-year time period. So people think that warp speed made it at warp speed. No, it was already there. I think the messenger RNA technology was in place before Trump, before 2020. You know, it was almost done before Trump took office. Remember that TED talk by the guy from Moderna, one of their chief doctors, said we've hacked the software of life. So he announced on a TED talk that this has already been done. They already have the vaccine, you know, for the virus that hasn't been hit yet. And that came, I think, only a couple of months after Trump took office. And then the week before Trump took office, this is 2017, you know, Dr. Fauci announces at Georgetown University that Trump's going to face a major pandemic. Duh. Okay. Then he had in October of 2019, Event 201, which is from the World Economic Forum. Well, it's George Soros, you know, Gates, you know, Bill Gates and Zuckerberg and the other, you know, alleged self-anointed masters of the world. And the fact that it happened at a World Economic Forum and not a World Medical Forum is fascinating, because they basically designed COVID around economics instead of medical stuff, proving that, once again, this is only about selling vaccines. And they talked about managing the information and suppressing stuff and censoring, you know, stuff in social media and getting the right stories out. So they had this all planned out in the media, you know, back in the fall of 2019. Look up Project 201 or Event 201. It's all there, right? So then COVID gets released into the world sometime October, November of 2019. That's why it's called COVID-19 and not COVID-20. My personal timeline begins with Bill Gertz in February of 2020 when Bill Gertz, Washington Times, we got really lucky, you know, a friend of a friend, right? So Bill Gertz, the premier foreign policy reporter, talks about the Wuhan lab as a source for this new virus that nobody really knows about, okay? Well, so the fact that people are reporting it, you know, a year or so later, hey, we found the Wuhan lab has released COVID. Well, we knew that in February. Bill Gertz told us. And it was, you know, it was in the Washington Times. Now, they scrubbed the stories. They may be back now, but they scrubbed those stories. They took those out because big tech didn't want people thinking that, oh, no, this might have come from Wuhan, China, when in fact it did. And it came because they couldn't, you know, do it here. Obama actually stopped the gain-of-function research that was necessary to create the right virus for the vaccine they already had. So, and all these things are patented and all these things are licensed, and the players, the main players are the government health bureaucrats. That'd be Dr. Fascist, Redfield, Birx, Collins, Sarah, what's her name, the woman currently running CDC. They're the government players. Then you got the private industry players, the heads of Pfizer, Moderna, you know, AstraZeneca, all these different companies, these vaccine, you know, manufacturers. And then you got the universities. And so the money comes from the taxpayer to the NIH. You know, Dr. Fascist is primarily a grant writer, gives money to the universities for things that he's already patented, licensed, and they further develop it, and they do the research at the university at taxpayer expense. Then the universities give all the formulas to the manufacturers, you know, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, those folks. And they get all this money, and then they get money to produce the vaccine, so they have no production costs, no research costs, no advertising costs, especially when the thing is mandated, right? So they're pure profit with no cost and no risk and no liability. You can't lose. That's why they're making billions of dollars, because they had no production costs, they had no marketing costs, they had no research costs, no development costs, no advertising costs. And so, but they get all the profit. Well, that's insane. And of course, a lot of that profit is kicked back in terms of license fees, marketing, license fees. What else have they got? Patents, things like that. And we know that because the NIH took Moderna to court to make sure they got their cut. Okay. So this is how this all works. And so now we're in a place now where they're basically, they've got a government mandated product. It's like Obamacare. I mean, they got away with mandating, you know, that you had to buy health insurance, even though that's unconstitutional. Now they're mandating that you have to, you know, take a chemical injection of a messenger RNA, you know, gene-altering therapy into your body so they can get rich. And it doesn't stop COVID. It doesn't stop the spread. Doesn't prevent the spread. It may lessen the symptoms slightly, but it also causes a whole bunch more systems, screws around with your autoimmune system, helps cancer develop much faster, and does a bunch of other terrible things. And that gene is pretty much where we are.
Interesting, yeah.
So does that kind of give you a timeline that you can latch onto?
Yeah. You know, I knew that some of that stuff, but it's just you don't know. It's there's so much stuff out there. It's so frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. I understand. And this is why I try to make sense of it. And at the risk of alienating people with too many details, I mean, I really try to lay this stuff down. This is why you should listen to our show in segments, because if you try to listen all at once, you're going to go crazy. And that's where that is. All right, let me change the subject a little bit. I've got several things here. Really great article I've been kind of saving. It's called The Day Elite Media Abandoned Journalism. I may do that one today. This might be a good day for that. But let's get some political news. This is from Headline USA. Pennsylvania court okays inspection of Dominion voting machines. So all you folks that thought that the election audits have gone away, no, they haven't. They're just slowed down greatly by people that don't want election audits because they don't want you to know that they screwed around with the election and basically it's a fraud. So this is from Headline USA. This is Tony Seifert, S-I-F-E-R-T, December 27th, 2021. So what, 2 days ago. So the Pennsylvania judge has allowed the state Senate's inspection of Dominion voting machines. There's that name again, Dominion. What a surprise. Used by Fulton County in the 2020 presidential election to proceed, according to a report from the Associated Press. Well, you have to believe them. They get more articles here, too. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf's administration had sought to prevent the inspection from taking place, asking the court on December 18th to stop a digital exchange scheduled for December 22nd. Now, why would they do that? Why would a governor not want his voting machines inspected? Why would the Secretary of State not want his voting machines or her voting machines inspected? Gee, do you think there might be something in the voting machines that went wrong? In other words, a fraud, an internet connection, a programming? You know, and it says, in response, Commonwealth Court Judge Mary Jenna delayed the inspection until January 10th in order to give the state and county officials time to work out an agreed-upon set of rules for an inspection. That's from AP again. Executive branch officials were trying to stop the inspection altogether, but the judge did not grant their emergency motion to stop the inspection. And that's from Attorney Tom King of the Amistad Project. Those are good people, right? Who represents Fulton County in a press release. They did not go to court seeking a delay. They sought to stop it, and they lost. Yeah. So basically, they want to stop the inspection. Well, why would you want to stop the inspection? I mean, shouldn't all voting machines be inspected after an election? I think so. I think it should be inspected before an election. Personally, I would get rid of voting machines and go to hand counts at the precinct level and then call the results into the county level and then call the results in from there. But there should be no break in the chain of custody. Votes need to be paper ballots, cast, and counted. And they're counted where they're cast. They don't get transported anywhere. The results can't, but the ballots themselves should be counted where they are cast, and those results should go out from there. Since the court recognized that it was improper to demand that the county, which owns the machines and has the responsibility of running the election along with the legislature, can't determine whether the machines work properly. And that's Phil Klein, director of the Amistad Project. Yeah, I think some of this is written badly. It looks like they sort of mixed up their references. Says there's no justification for preventing the county from looking at their own machines. Oh, there you go. The Pennsylvania Senate Intergovernmental Operations Committee, which has been charged with the investigation, has hired Envoy Sage to conduct the investigation. Wolf's administration decertified the county's voting system for future elections in July because it was subjected to a post-election review by a third-party software company, that's Wake TS1, in violation of Pennsylvania's election code. Oh, that's interesting. So they decertified the machines because they were looked at. Hmm. As a result of the access granted to Wake TSI, Secretary of State Veronica W. D. Graffenried, there's a new name, wrote in a press release, Fulton County's certified system has been compromised, and neither Fulton County, the vendor, Dominion Voting Systems, nor the Department of State can verify that the implemented components of Fulton County's leased voting system are safe to use in future elections. So now I'm confused. See if I go back and try and figure out who was getting rid of this and who was not. The Pennsylvania judge allowed the state inspection to go ahead. Who was fighting it? Oh, yeah, Pennsylvania. Oh, so the governor fought it. All right, there we go. Governor, Secretary of State. Anyway, so there you go. More stuff to know and tell. Let me see if I can get you another story. This one's going to be a little bit longer. And it goes to what we were talking about with Ukraine. We had some stuff on that from Peter Pryor yesterday. So let's get Gene back here. And hopefully I want to encourage a couple of callers to call, because as much as I love these articles, I don't want to sit here and read them to you. I'd much rather talk to you, yeah, you know, about things that are going on. I'd much rather talk to Gene. I want to talk to, you know, so and don't leave it all to Pianchi and Josie. You know, some of the other folks, feel free. This is, you know, the show, I think Wednesdays go better. We don't have 3 hours all to ourselves. You know, I miss Dave calling it, because Dave's, you know, the more voices we have, the more interesting I think the show gets.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Hmm.
And it's also different perspectives, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
We can always stop early.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you have enough, we can always stop early.
No, so
I'm the boss. I can do that. Yeah, go ahead.
I got a question. Did the Gazelle Maxwell, did a verdict come down in her case?
Ooh, yeah, let's talk about that. In fact, I actually had a few points that I've totally forgotten about. First of all, we're on live chat. If anybody wants to live chat us, if you can't call in, you can always type in. And so you go to live chat. I think it's in the top left corner. Get yourself a free account on Blog Talk, and live chat will allow you to type in any message, and we'll respond to that. We check those periodically, especially when it's really active. And I've already done the daily schedule from the White House. Yeah, I've got a couple of things here. Oh, yeah, let's go through some of these. This should be more interesting. So Ghislaine Maxwell. I think I learned how to spell her name. Ghislana, Ghislaine Maxwell. They've been deliberating for 5 days. It's not like this is a capital crime, I don't think. Well, other than the fact that Epstein was, we think, murder, but that's different. So basically, she was Epstein's pimp, right? She got the girls, the underage girls for him. I mean, that's basically what she's on trial for, if I understand it. And some of the girls who are now women, you know, came forward and said, this is what happened. And my contention is, and I said this a couple of days ago, that they're going to get a mistrial. That she's going, everybody's got a deal. The jury has a deal somehow. Someone's been paid off in the jury, so that it becomes a mistrial. They're just going to say, oh, I can't reach a decision. I can't possibly reach a decision. The judge says, go back and try harder. Try again. No, I've tried. I've wrecked my brains. I'm just stressed over this. I can't. I don't know what to do. What's that guy from Welcome Back, Cotter? I'm so confused. Anyway, so someone on the jury, or maybe a couple of members, have been bought off, I think. Pure speculation on my part. We can't prove it. To cause a mistrial. Well, who benefits from a mistrial? Well, she does, because she doesn't go to jail. But her part in this is if they give her a mistrial, then she has to shut the hell up. You know, she can't come out and tell all the things she knows. All right.
But everybody that should be brought to justice will also be spared.
Which is the whole point of the mistrial. So
exactly. So how sad. So once again, it's money talks.
Yep, sure is. So Prince Andrew and Bill Clinton and all the other toadies that the horrible, disgusting, you know, slime on the bottom of the ocean human beings that really have no business being in positions of authority or power, yet they were, might get away with abusing and sexually assaulting or raping maybe young women, underage women. And that's disgusting. That sounds like something Bill Clinton would do based on his track record with Monica and other very young women. That's I can see him, you know. I can see Joe Biden. We haven't heard about it yet, but who knows? Was Biden on Epstein's little fantasy island? And Prince Andrew. You know, I mean, God, he had a great mother. What was his problem? you know, Princess Diana was Andrew's mom. It's like, Andrew, look what you grew into, I think. I'm pretty sure. Do I have that right?
No, it's the Queen. The Queen is his mom.
Prince Andrew?
Yes.
He must be older than I thought then. All right. Okay, so then I got it wrong.
It's the Queen is his mom.
Okay, so the Queen's sons were Andrew and Charles.
Yeah.
Did I have that right? Okay.
Yes.
All right. So in that case, Diana's kids are much younger then. And so I've all right. So good. This is why I have Jean here. So I might totally screw up things. So Andrew and Charles is another disgusting human being. God, married to Princess Diana and dumps her for Camilla Bowles. Dude, what were you thinking? Anyway, talk about, contrasting one of the finest people that ever lived. You know, I love Princess Diana. She was just wonderful. All right. So then it must be, so who are Diana's kids? William and?
Harry.
Harry. Okay. So, all right. So Prince Andrew's, you know, so Prince Andrew must be then what? I guess he was older than I thought.
He must be, I don't know.
60s?
60s. Yeah. I don't know. How old is Prince Charles? In his 70s?
I think so. Well, the Queen's 80 plus something. Queen's in her 80s. So I think Charles is probably
90. She's in her 90s, I think.
Oh, she's in her 90s? Okay, so then Charles is probably in his 70s. Andrew might be in his 60s. Okay.
So he's in his 60s or 70s. I don't know. I'm not a royal follower.
Well, no, I mean, I being a member of the Commonwealth, being a Canadian citizen, loosely affiliated with the British Commonwealth, these things are interesting to me, but I don't keep track of the monarchy either. I'm still amused that Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, idiot.
Yes.
Just because you're royalty doesn't mean you're smart. That's been proven over and over again.
You know, it's interesting for those two. For as much as they wanted to get out of the limelight, they sure seem to like it in this country.
Yeah, well, she likes the limelight. She's an actress. I mean, that's your stock and trade, is being in the limelight. You know, for those that don't know, they actually had lime in the lights. That's where it came from, that expression. So they used limestone. It was some kind of way of, that's where the lights looked green in the old theater productions back in the 1800s. Points to no one tell. All right, so we got our royalty. But the point where we started this silly discussion this morning is Ghislaine Maxwell, who is British, I believe. And the question is, do rich and powerful people have a different standard of justice? And of course, the answer is yes. Yes, they do. So that's why Bill Clinton and Prince Andrew, who we now know was the Queen's son, thanks to Jean, will not be put on trial, you know, for sexually assaulting, allegedly raping, or potentially abusing in other ways young underage women, even though they should be. And so, yeah, so that's the problem. So I think the fix is in. I think it's going to be a mistrial. I think she's going to be her part of the deal is to shut up, and the rich and powerful people who we just talked about aren't going to be outed by this situation. Does that sound about right, Jean?
Yeah. And once again, the people that, the real victims in the story, they're the ones that are pretty much, you know, informed that their lives don't matter because they're not rich, they're not famous, they are not
exactly
the people. How's that? How's that?
Yeah. I have, well, hopefully, you know, be interesting to see if the women who were the accusers, who are not on trial for anything, obviously, because they're victims. It'd be interesting to see if they now had the chance to write stuff because Ghislaine Maxwell is going to be under her little secrecy deal.
That would be interesting. Yeah.
Who's
yeah.
to say that they
I mean,
can't?
That would be nice for at least the people to know the real story. I mean, that is just sad, just so sad. But also, I still question if he's actually dead.
Oh, I think he's dead, but I think he was murdered. You know,
if he is dead, yes, I agree with you there.
So he's either alive somewhere or he's, you know, he was murdered. I don't think committed suicide. Why would he commit suicide? People that arrogant don't commit suicide. People with that much money, that access to great lawyers, they don't commit suicide. You know,
exactly.
I mean, the poor people facing desperate situations commit suicide. I mean, was he even the slightest bit depressed? He looked pretty arrogant to me. He looked like he felt pretty much on top of things. So the conditions for suicide don't seem to exist with him any more than any of the other Clinton people. That's another story. All right, here's something that struck me as interesting. It's kind of sideline. I sort of hesitate to mention it, but it might be indicative of our times. There was a real tragedy in Los Angeles. A 14-year-old girl was killed by police officers, they say, stray bullet. So there's some kind of altercation. Somebody was assaulting or attacking somebody else in some clothing store. A police officer fired, and the bullet went through the wall and killed a 14-year-old girl on the other side. Now, I found it interesting when the father spoke, he didn't speak English. And then I found out that the family came from Chile less than a year ago, and that she came here wanting to be an engineer and, you know, wanting to do all kinds of things, which is really great. My question is there any chance those folks are in the country illegally? Because they're not mentioning that in the story. Not that I'm saying that, you know, I'm not connecting that to the fact that she died and that this is a horrible, tragic death. I'm not wishing that on there. What I'm saying is the fact that there's many people that Brandon has led into the country illegally, are they now showing up in the news as victims in this case? You know, is the impact of all these extra people, these 2 million extra people that are coming in illegally, is that going to show up more and more in our lives in terms of victims, in terms of criminals, in terms of Americans who are killed by drunk illegal alien drivers? I don't know. I'd be curious just for the information whether these folks were in the country legally or did they cross the – because they've only been in the country less than a year. Which
so the
means,
girl, the poor girl that was killed from the stray bullet was here illegally?
I don't know. I mean,
possibly?
I never victimized the kids. The kids are the responsibility of the parents. But my question is, did the parents walk into this country across the southern border? And the tragedy is that a police officer, you know, let a bullet go that obviously, you know, I'm guessing wasn't, you know, as controlled as they're supposed to be and only, you know, stopped the threat. This one went through a wall and killed an innocent girl. My question is,
I mean, is a tragedy.
And it's absolutely tragic. Oh, no, this is a horrible thing. And I'm not saying that if she were illegal, she deserved it. I want to make very clear what I'm talking about. But what I'm saying is, are we now starting to see the impact in the news of people that Brandon's government, the insurrection, brought into our country illegally? And the cost in terms of this is going to be a major investigation. This is going to be, you know, in other words, are we starting to see that impact? Are we going to see more impact in the schools of the illegal aliens that are here? Are we going to see more impact in the crime statistics? Are we going to see more impact in the budgets? You know, are there going to be an impact in the voting, you know, of illegals voting? You know, is this the start of, and it wasn't mentioned in the news. So the first thing, you know, my initial question is like when Pianki hears about a criminal and they say, well, did they say he was black? You know, and we'll say, no. I said, well, then they're probably black, you know. And so there's an assumption. So why would you say a family came from Chile less than a year ago, they're trying for U.S. citizenship, and not give their status and not say these are legal or lawful permanent residents? I mean, that'd be the first thing I would want to know.
But the bottom line is this. Why would – I don't even know why they'd say it at all for – I don't know. I mean, I guess what – why did they say it? To let people know more about her background? I mean, it was a horrible thing that happened. Obviously, someone's going to pay. The cop will probably go to be charged with something and then go to jail because of manslaughter or whatever. And the person they were shooting at, the real thug, is going to get away and continue to do the whatever. And that's the sad thing. You know, the thing is, that the family came a year ago, that has nothing to do with the girl. So why would I don't even see the point why they bring it up, because it's like she was an innocent bystander. Just because she came from a different country didn't mean that, well, she's she's where she wasn't supposed to be there. I mean, if she's there with her family, or even if she's
and
there
I'm not
on
saying
vacation,
that either.
It don't matter.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like they shouldn't
yeah.
have brought it up. It's like I don't get it. What you know, it's
well, see, now I'm curious. Why did they bring it up? Well, first of all, the first thing you notice is the father doesn't speak English. I mean, he's really distraught. I mean
well,
I feel horribly sorry for him.
Yeah.
So, but the question is, you know, but legal immigrants have to speak English. That's part of the qualification for being an immigrant to this country. You speak English. You have at least a working knowledge of English. So when I see someone that came to this country less than a year ago, because during the time that the borders have been open, that doesn't speak English, I think it's reasonable to assume they came under the Biden illegal program.
I don't know.
I don't either. I'm just asking the question.
You know, I just
and again,
know a
I'm
lot
asking
of people.
It, yeah.
I know a lot of people here that can't speak English, which is a sad thing.
And are they legal, lawful immigrants? I'll drag Jean back. She's off the air for a second. We'll find out. The folks that, folks that don't speak English.
Look at the chat too. I'm not sure. He could be talking about a couple different things, but
we do have a chat. Okay, but here's the question though: if you're in the country as a lawful permanent resident, you know, headed for citizenship, you have to speak English.
Yeah, but,
the
thing is, a lot of them don't. Yeah, but they don't. A lot of them don't. I know a lot of people here, just even in Minnesota, in Georgia. All over, they don't speak English. There's a lot
of
people,
don't. And a lot of people come in fraudulently. I mean, the whole anchor baby situation where the parents, the grandparents, the uncles, the aunts, and the cousins come into this country, and they don't have to speak English because they're brought in. You know, anchor baby is an illegal concept. Oh, I got purple pill. We got a new person joining the conversation.
Yeah, he was there
sick
yesterday.
Bigot. Oh, it says I'm a sick bigot? Well, I have to get that explained. Anyway. I guess purple pill is a merging of the red pill and the black and the blue pill. Is that what a purple pill person is? It's hard to. Yeah. So in other words, they believe half the reality and half the fantasy. Purple pill, you have to explain yourself. So what we're doing now is I'm reading from live chat. Now, if you're listening on podcast, you're not seeing the live chat because the live chat only happens when we're live. So purple pill has made a couple of comments. Epstein is on a Tel Aviv beach. I guess you're assuming he is a reference that he might be Jewish. Epstein, yeah, it could be. That makes sense. With some Eastern European hotties. Why Eastern European? Is it like mail order hotties for Tel Aviv? What difference does it make? She was murdered. So I guess we're talking about the girl that was killed by the. Murder requires intent. I don't think the police officer intended to kill this 14-year-old girl. And again, this is why I'm sort of overdoing the fact that I'm saying, yes, this is a tragedy. Yes, this shouldn't have happened. Yes, she did not deserve this, you know, if she's in the country illegal, if her parents brought her illegally. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it was interesting that the news made the point of saying that they're from Chile, they've been in the country less than a year, and they're going for U.S. citizenship. Okay, so that tells me they're either lawful permanent residents or they're illegal aliens. I just found that interesting that part wasn't reported. Okay, so in other words, it's more about the news coverage, and it's about the fact that are we seeing the impact now in the news and in tragedies like this of the fact that we have 2 million, or we're going to have 2 million extra illegal aliens in this country. Oh, purple is the color of the crown chakra. Oh, now it's getting interesting. So purple pill is still active. Great. Okay, so the crown chakra, that would be the top of your head, I'm guessing. Yeah, if you want to do a quick explanation of the chakras, maybe we have to look that up. So why would the crown chakra purple pill? See, this is weird. I'm talking to somebody on live chat directly. It's kind of interesting. So why would the crown chakra be critical for your identification? Feel free to comment on that one too. Anyway, anybody wants to join live chat, it's really easy. Just get a free account from Blog Talk Radio, and then you can type away. And I do find these fascinating. Sick bigot. I guess is that a reference to me? We'll find out. Pineal gland is purple. Pineal gland. Gene, what's the pineal gland? Give me a second to help me out with that one. We shall see. Okay. All right. Pineal gland is purple. I have to look at that one up myself. Pineal gland. This is what happens when I do unrehearsed stuff on the air. Or not unrehearsed, but totally spontaneous stuff. Let's see if I can find that out here. Gene's busy for a minute. Wait a minute. P-A-L, pineal gland. Huh, here we go. my radio show. We're kind of cruising around anyway at this point. It's a pine cone-shaped small gland located in the middle of the human brain in between two hemispheres, an area called the epithalamus. Oh, the third eye, major site for melatonin, secretion which regulates body's internal clock, circadian rhythm. I thought melatonin was skin color. No, that's different. All right. Okay, so third eye. Ah, so we have a very insightful test here. That's what it looks like. Okay, good. All right. So, yeah, if you want to comment on my story on L.A., that's fair game. It is a tragedy, but I'm just curious how much impact these 2 million people extra going to have, and I think we're finding out very clearly that they're going to have a lot of impact. All right. Let me take a break for a second here, too. Let me find something for you guys, and I'll be right back in just a little bit. Oh, excuse me. I hate doing that. That's what happens when I'm holding down the fort here. Oh, let's really be controversial. Let's really piss off. Excuse me. Sorry to do that again. Propofol, let's have some fun with this one. Here it is, America. The answer to riots, brutality, and all our racial problems. The return of the January white sale. Are you a guilt-ridden white person? Are you a person of no color? Do you want to finally assuage that guilt for slavery, the Civil War, the KKK, and black people sitting at the back of the bus? Well, here is your long-awaited answer. The Black Lives Matter Department of Reparations has come up with the perfect solution, the return of the January white sale. Now, in years past, this was a big deal. After Christmas, sheets, towels, pillowcases, and other white linens were sold with their biggest discount of the year. In today's new normal world, however, things are going to be very different. Because Black Lives Matter is changing the original white sale, and now they are actually going to be auctioning off and selling white people. You, white, guilt-ridden, ashamed of your whiteness, complete cowards, bowing your heads, kneeling, raising your hands like at a revival meeting, you with your eyes cast down, you whimpering liberals hoping to buy your way out of a debt of guilt that can never be fully repaid, because no leftist of color wants you to. You will have the chance to experience what no black person experiences in the United States today. Slavery. Yeah, that's right. Slavery. Isn't this great? You'll be on the cutting edge of social justice, and you will save the taxpayers some $14 trillion of reparations national debt. Black Lives Matter has gone to a lot of trouble to erase our history and remake society so guilty white people can finally feel free of their white supremacy. George Soros and Bill Gates have already created the Venture Capital Fund to establish Race Bait Consulting, Incorporated, which will be handling the actual white person sale in January. So, who is available for purchase? Oh, and part of the deal is that white people can't be bought by other white people. That would defeat the whole theme of the event. Anyway, to the question. Your basic rifle on the pickup truck, racist, sexist, Islamophobe, Neanderthal, redneck male, is probably not going to sit around and be put in an auction, even if they will be well cared for by their new owners. What we will have available are liberal, surrendering, grilly man metrosexuals and emotionally distraught and disillusioned feminists, both of whom have already knelt before a designated agent of Black Lives Matter to confess their white privilege. So how do you guilt-ridden white people sign up for the January white sale? It's easy. Contact your local chapter of Black Lives Matter, show up at a rally with a flag saying, "Take me for the January white sale," or simply sign up at the next mass kneeling confession of white privilege coming to a neighborhood near you. The new January white sale is made possible by a grant from Race Bait Industries, Incorporated, and put on by the new normal, new improved Black Lives Matter. Oh, the fun we have here, especially I got Purple Pill, which is great. We have a new texting person. And so that's
hey, Greg, I can no longer get to what Purple Pill is saying because I did something to my screen. So, but wow, I always consider enlightened people pretty amazing. But if you guys could hear the comments, some of it, it's like not enlightened or not holistic at all, put it that way, because I know a lot of holistic friends and they would never they would never say some of the stuff that be condescending and stuff what that person is, and not saying it's right or wrong, but it's like obviously it's not what their name implies.
Yeah. No, and quite honestly, if they want to, you know, people are free to express their opinion. As the texting, you know, our live chat is a place where you can be pretty much as outrageous as you want. Obviously, I'm not going to read things that are, you know, swearing, disgusting, and things like that. But for the most part, you can be controversial. And I love that. So Purple Pill, here's a good comment. It says, there's no such thing as third eye. What the ignorant masses refer to as the third eye is and always has been the first eye. And so, Purple Pill, you got to explain that. You want to call the show, feel free, 215-383-3832.
But that's what I'm getting at. Sorry, that's what I'm getting at. I know a lot of holistic people, a lot of people that are on self-actualization journeys, and they would never, I mean, they still call the third eye the third eye. They don't call it the first eye. I mean, if you look at chakras, there's way more than what people think there are. Or what mainstream media think they are. But to me, that sounds like a very bitter person. And they call me out on it. But it's like, that is bitter when you're so nitpicking when that's what people call the third eye is the third eye.
I mean, if you want to call it
the first, I don't care what it is. But it's like, wow. There's more important things going on in this world than that.
Third eye, first
you
eye.
You know, and especially when... You look at all the literature, not all, but most of the literature, they call it the third eye. And so,
No, it's not something I'm as well versed in, but I read a fascinating book, Eastern Body, Western Mind, Enodiajuth, which was incredible. And it talked about the chakras and how, they basically put the Eastern chakras onto Western, intelligence and how we view things through an Eastern viewpoint. Or how we would see things. It was fascinating, but it had all kinds of just amazing advice. I should get that book covered at some point here. I'll drag it out again. But chakra knowledge is quite fascinating. And so I want to delve more into things like that on this show as ways of looking at all the things we do, because there's the beauty of living in San Francisco where I was, because we had Chinese medicine and we had Western medicine, and some things were more appropriate. I went to a Chinese pharmacy. You know, he's got drawers full of all these herbs and things, and it was really cool. And that was what the doctors prescribed, were the literal herbs coming out of the drawers. They had ginseng in the window and some other things I recognized. But the point was, most of our medicine comes from those plants and herbs. And the difference is Western medicine, makes it in pill form and charges you more. But Chinese medicine is the same thing. To me, the most appropriate medicine would be a nice mixture of Chinese and Western, where appropriate. So why not? So in other words, if we can look at our philosophy in the same way, that if we can take Indian philosophy of the chakras and then look at, how we see things Western view and kind of, work them both through, it's going to get really interesting. So it looks like Gene and Purple Pill are arguing a little bit. So I'm going to skip some of that stuff. Let's get back to issues. You want to talk chakras?
No, we're not arguing.
Oh, okay. Well, my mistake.
She is just continuing to criticize me, and I'm not going to that level.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah, Gene's the one that types back the answers. I don't. So,
it's like, obviously he's not from this country. So they think that they are aware of everything and the meanings of what we say here. That's not true. And I'm not going there. Greg, I told you last week, I don't want to be in this dark energy. That's a dark energy.
Okay. Well, I can be in it then. I kind of wall this up. See, to me, this politics is a sport. I mean, I really look at it that way. It's a competition. It's a sport. And I don't, I'm emotionally invested in the show here, but I'm not so invested that I can't have fun with it. So now I'll talk about things, in terms of, guess what, so-and-so said today. I said, I can't believe you're not taking that seriously. Well, it's because that's how I keep my balance. And so chakras are a way of balancing also. And I will look more into it. All right. Got a few more things going on here. There's somebody that kind of intrigues me that I don't know a whole lot about. And I've heard about him a few times. Aaron Rodgers, I guess he's the Green Bay football team quarterback. He's come out and says quite openly that the COVID narrative is propaganda. He's the one that took the advice of Joe Rogan, for example, took ivermectin, got over COVID almost immediately. And he's someone I don't know about, but I think I'll do a little investigating because he's becoming more and more public. And Green Bay's keeping him on, which is good. And then we'll see what happens. Anyway, Josie's here, so let's get her take on stuff. Yeah, we're kind of free for all. We got a little bit more. I still have to play a couple more announcements, and that's about all I have of the official stuff today. But Josie, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I was on I-10 and it was a little loud. That's why I hung up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, you're fine.
I've been involved. I've been involved in politics since I've been 17 years old.
Yeah.
And I kind of grew up in the Capitol, the Pentagon, the State Department, so I was seeing a lot of stuff since I was a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't offend me. It doesn't bother me, a lot of the stuff that the radical left or people that they're ignorant, that they don't know what they're talking about. They think they know everything and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what? I could care less. I know what I know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I try to tell people about it and they think I'm crazy. But it's okay. They're going to find out the truth. You know, and earlier you guys were talking about Epstein and all this commotion going on. I truly believe that he's alive. He's not dead.
Okay.
So is George Floyd. He's alive. And Osama bin Laden is alive, too. So all these people are not dead. They're alive. This is all a well-organized crime that these Democrats have created, you know, and
well,
including the whistleblower that that clown came up with to indict Donald Trump, you know. It's sad. It's all well organized, this whole thing.
Well, it's definitely organized, but I think Osama bin Laden actually was killed long before Obama took credit for it. In fact, Rush Limbaugh used to talk about this cave somewhere that was completely blown out. Because, you know, these guys hide in caves. And so they think Osama bin Laden died, like, you know, 15 years ago. Okay, no, I'm just, this
alive.
Is what I hear. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, we're both speculating here.
Yeah.
But I don't think he died when Obama said he did. And I don't think they buried him at sea. They wouldn't have done that. They would have kept his body and, you know, and studied and, you know.
The,
yeah.
Why do you think Obama sent the billions of dollars, with a trillions to Iran, 50 trillion, and Obama said, wait a minute, I'm going to send 52, so they can send...
No, he didn't send 50, no. No, the whole U.S. 52? Economy is only about 23 trillion, so he didn't send $50 trillion. That's twice the U.S. economy. So
How much did he send?
I don't know, but I think it was like $150 billion. There were pallets on airplanes full of cash, and there were various transfers. And what he really did was unfreeze a lot of assets. So we had frozen assets from around going back, I think, to the hostage crisis.
Yeah.
Well, that's a little bit less. A little bit less than $50
trillion. Yeah.
but your heart's in the right place, so it's okay. But as far as, you know, when these people were actually killed or not, you know, so we had three people you mentioned. You had Osama bin Laden, which I think was killed far earlier. We had Jeffrey Epstein, which I think was murdered, which I still think was probably murdered in prison because he's not around. If wouldn't he be talking? You know, if he were still around, he might be called as a witness. And why would you keep him alive? Why would you hide him? Why would you fake his death? Who gains? I was looking for the motivation. Who gains by his death?
He's well protected. Oh, yeah.
But who gains from his death?
Well, he had high power people with him, you know.
Right.
And I don't.
So obviously, he could keep a secret though.
When,
yeah, but he could keep a secret when he was alive. You know, so you know, why would they kill him? See, again, motivation. What's the point of that? Just, you know, to say that you know, he committed suicide. Nobody. I don't think hardly anybody believes that unless they're true. You know, the true believers.
No.
So we got Obama, Epstein. Who was the other person you said was still alive?
George Floyd?
I don't think so. I think what I heard from the autopsy report, he had a lethal dose of fentanyl in his system. How he wouldn't be alive anyway, if the cop hadn't arrested him, you know, he would have died within 20 minutes anyway from a fatal overdose of fentanyl.
Two weeks prior to this whole commotion show, they had the signs prepared. Bottle water frozen, bricks. They had everything well organized. All of it. Yeah. 2 weeks prior to this whole show that they put. Oh, yeah. You'll find out later. Right now, you just
can't wait.
You can think whatever you want. Yeah.
I do. In fact, I broadcast what I think, so everybody knows what I think. It's pretty open. Yeah. Hey, let me run some things by you from Purple Pill. Purple Pill is our live chat texter right now. Here's one that's interesting. Americans have the concept, let's all be ignorant together. Anyone that stands out is bad. You know, childish cowards.
I think we have lots of people standing out. We've got people standing out. We've got doctors standing out. We've got politicians standing out. We've got all kinds of journalists who are standing out. I'm standing out. You know, I don't think ignorance together is that, you know, I would disagree with that comment by Purple Pill. Here's another one. Mossad always protects their own. Average Americans do not possess the cognizance to discern much at all. So basically, Purple Pill is calling us stupid. Okay, fine. You're entitled to your opinion, stupid as it is. I always said, there's something I just read that Epstein is from the Mossad. Where did I find that? Let me see if I can find that quote again. Dark energy is a good thing. Da, da, da. Oh, Epstein is Mossad. Have you heard that, Josie? Jeffrey Epstein is a Mossad agent?
No, I haven't heard that.
See, and that doesn't make sense either, because why would Mossad be interested in, I mean, they spy on us. I mean, if we spy on them, they spy on us. Everybody spies on each other. Why would you have Epstein? I mean, what, because Epstein had all these rich and powerful people going to his island? You know,
Epstein was too busy selling children to all the rich, like Clinton, Hollywood, all the top head honchos, a lot of senators too.
Has he ever visited Israel? I don't remember him ever showing up in Israel, but you know, you never know. I just don't think that makes sense because the guy was he was a monster. So I don't understand. Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
That's the word, a monster. And you know, there's a picture of Donald Trump and Ivanka Trump when she was a young girl, maybe like 13 or something like that. And they put Epstein next to it, but they photoshopped it. And we went and looked at the real picture later, and you can see that Donald Trump is in a motorcycle with his daughter getting off his motorcycle, right, mm-hmm. You know? And they make it look so people can see that Donald Trump is with Epstein, but it's not true. So these people are trying everything to say that Donald Trump was in the island, and it's not true at all.
No, well, apparently he threw Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. Yeah, we got to talk to somebody in Mar-a-Lago. Yeah. How can we contact the Trump office?
Annie Delgado. She's called Annie Delgado. She's part of Mar-a-Lago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. She used to be on the show here until she kind of. Well, anyway. It was interesting having Annie on. Yeah, Annie was kind of fun. Nothing against Annie, but, it's just, I'll save my comments. Do you know anything about Aaron Rodgers? Do you know anything about this quarterback guy? I don't know where the media is suppressing him, keeping him out there. Okay. Oh, I got something texted into me. Let me relate this to you. I almost forgot about this. Three professional soccer players died of heart attacks in the last 5 days. Croatian Marin Kacik, 23 years old. Algerian Soufiane Loker, 30 years old. Omani Maklid Al-Rakadi, 29 years old. I'm assuming that they all had the vax shot because I think all professional athletes have to do that. Yeah, but three – and these are all 23, 30, and 29. So soccer players are particularly vulnerable because they have a huge amount of aerobic – they got to really expand their lungs to play soccer. So that's lungs and heart.
They're in good shape for those people,
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, Greg, one by one, they're dropping of heart attacks at Olive Baptist Church, my church. There's many having heart attacks. So many in my Sunday school class that I only have 16 couples, a total of 16 people in my Sunday school class. And three already had heart problems in the hospital. Another lady had a stroke, and it is from the vaccine, and she had blood clots in her legs. My friend at West Florida Hospital, he's about to die. His brain is like mush now because they killed him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's ready. His heart stopped for 5 minutes the other day. And now
how old is he?
Almost.
How old is he about?
I would say maybe like 52, 54 even.
See, that's nothing. That's a young person.
Yeah. Very healthy guy, too. He was doing the lawn, and he was doing everything like a couple of days before he really told his wife that he didn't feel good with the COVID. And all he needed was a little bit of help for his oxygen level. That's it. They refused. They started giving him remdesivir immediately, shut down his kidneys, blew up one of his lungs, and then they started dialysis. And this guy has been in the ventilator on and off, and these people are murder, and the family does not want to get an attorney. I don't understand. I'm very, very disappointed with this family because I told the young son that came from out of state to visit for Christmas, I said, even if you don't do it for your daddy, do it for the rest of the people that they're killing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stop this killing in the hospitals, and they're not doing anything. Oh, we're going to put it in God's hands. Yes, we are, but God gave us a mind to think, you know, and they're not doing nothing about it, and I'm very, very upset about this whole thing, very upset.
Well, see, I don't understand this either. Don't they have to do medical reports? Don't they have to write up a report, you know, each time they lose somebody in the hospital? Don't they have to do some kind of filing of a report somewhere that says,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
we gave this person remdesivir, they ended up on a ventilator, they died.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many of those do you have to, I mean, how many,
yeah.
What's that, Jesse?
And the doctor that started taking care of him, which he did wrong, he already
mm-hmm.
quit. He's no longer his doctor. So they put somebody else, and they tried to get another doctor to help, but it was a little too late trying to get outside help. And the doctor was rude and nasty because they were trying to bring another doctor in the picture.
Well, they are
but
very territorial.
But refused to get an attorney. I mean, I don't understand. I would have sued the heck out of this hospital to stop the killing. They
well,
need
I'm
to
ask,
be stopped.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can find out for me what hospitals have to do after somebody dies in the hospital. Do they have some kind of requirement to report, you know, the treatments that they gave? What I'm thinking is that if enough people in enough hospitals are reporting exactly the same thing, that they're telling them to stay home until they're so sick they have to go to the hospital, they're getting remdesivir, which is causing the kidneys to fail, which causes their lungs to fill with fluid, which causes them to give
yeah.
the ventilator treatment, which tries to blow the fluid
yeah.
out rather than drain it, you know, and people are drowning in their
exactly.
own fluid. You would think at some
they're
point
dry.
Along the way with enough of these that this report, wouldn't you think there's some place where all these reports, these death reports are showing up?
I think if you ask for a medical record, they have to release their medical records. And that's what I told one of my best friends in Miami because her 39 or 40-year-old nephew, he
mm-hmm.
admitted himself to the hospital because he was having breathing problems with the COVID. And before you know it, he was under remdesivir and the ventilators, and they kill him. To make an example, so the rest got they were in a panic mode, and they all got vaccinated. Their family were freaking out. I said, don't do it, don't do it. And I know her that she's been a little girl. And she just gave the vaccine to her husband. And he had a stroke a couple years ago, and the only problem he had basically was a speech problem, you know, from the stroke, but
mm-hmm.
and a few issues he had. Not
right.
deadly issues. And as soon as he got the vaccine, he's dead 2 months later. They just buried him over a week ago. Yeah. So these vaccines are deadly. Everyone that has the vaccine will not escape from blood clots. I guarantee you that. They will not
right.
escape. I don't care who you are. And that's what I've been telling a lot of young people coming to my store. You better take some action. You better do some ivermectin to stop the blood clots because you will have them. Because these vaccines, they go into your blood cells, the tiny, the CT scan will not detect this. And that's why this lady in my Sunday school class, her leg was like almost red all the way down. And she said, they don't know what's wrong with me. I know what's wrong with you, I told her.
Yeah.
And she started
yeah.
taking ivermectin, and 2 weeks later, it kind of cleared away.
Yeah.
It was
How about that?
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and the other thing, too, is all these cases of, I mean, Dr. McCullough was talking about on Joe Rogan, excuse me, wrong Rogan,
uh-huh.
talked about 150,000 people that got early treatment, and they're doing just fine. You know, so
yes.
they've lost 800,000, you know, of which some 40,000 actually died from, not with COVID, but from it. And yet they're saving 150,000 people, you know, just with these early treatments. Well, let me get back to Purple Pill again. Purple Pill is typing a lot of things.
It's a little
contradictory. I'm not sure. It says Robert Maxwell, I guess that's Ghislaine Maxwell's husband. Does she have a husband? Was also a high-ranking Mossad operative. So Purple Pill thinks that the Maxwell family works for the Israeli secret police. I found that interesting. Queen of the honey traps, Purple Pill says. And it says, Americans are completely oblivious to Secret Services. Well, I don't think so. We've had a Secret Service since the 1800s, so
you know, we actually, I think we're pretty well versed in them. We know who MI6 is. We know who the KGB is. We know who Savak and some of these other secret polices have been. Some of the Eastern European countries had their secret police. We have one now, too. It's called the FBI. Yeah, and the FBI, which rips people out of their homes if they attended the Capitol Invitational walk-in January 6th. We're going to talk about that, too. Anyway, I got Jonathan on tomorrow. So I really want to ask him. I'll get a hold of him today and see if we can find out why medical malpractice can't be prosecuted for all these deaths, the denial of early treatment. It's three things that are killing people: the denial of early treatment, the introduction of remdesivir, which does nothing but, you know, cause your kidneys to fail, and then the ventilators for the fluid in your lungs instead of draining it. You would think, because I know, because I had fluid in my lungs after heart surgery. I've talked about this several times on the show. Mm-hmm. What they do, they drained it. Well, if you have too much fluid, the correct action is to take it out. So that, and once there was just a little tiny bit of fluid left, my body took care of that after my lungs inflated.
And it was done. And you know,
Greg,
the remdesivir was recall. So they should not be using remdesivir anymore in the hospital. And I believe they're still using it.
Is remdesivir
so
recalled?
People need to
who's recalled it?
I believe so. The CDC, I think.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Let me check on that. I got to play a couple things real quick. And I've got to play our two sponsors here, Strikeforce and our webmaster,
right,
who's done some amazing work.
Tomorrow,
okay,
I have
thanks,
to go
Jesse.
To the pharmacy.
Okay,
okay.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
God bless you, too. Let me play a couple things. Propofol, you're welcome to keep commenting. I'm going to play this for you. Be right back with the last few minutes of the show today.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Right Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at strikeforceenergy.com. That's strikeforceenergy.com. Start your engines.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page 1. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page 1. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com, B-E-S-M-A-L-L,
B-U-S-I-N-E-S-S. And you can reach him by email at eric@bsmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. So I looked up remnants of your recall, as Josie was talking about. A couple of lots were recalled because they found glass shards in them, which looks pretty scary if you're being given that in an IV. So you don't want glass with your IV. Okay, so they did a recall on that. But remdesivir, it's interesting. It comes from Gilead. Gilead is in Foster City. Foster City is south of San Francisco and just north of Silicon Valley. Coincidence? You tell me. Genentech's there too. So a lot of these biochemical pharmaceutical companies are located in the San Francisco Bay Area. I just find that interesting that the pharmaceuticals are the same place big tech is and that they work together. Coincidence? You tell me. All right. Purple Pill's got some more comments here. Talk about how poorly informed Americans are. Well, of course, my job is to change that. And Purple Pill, what country are you in right now? They said they were born in Florida, but I'm curious where they are now. So we'll figure it out. Oh, Robert Maxwell is apparently Ghislaine Maxwell's father, found floating naked in the Mediterranean Sea in the early 90s. And this is according to Purple Pill. So we got a good source here. So Purple Pill, you're welcome to call the show. You don't even have to take your Purple Pill. Just call the show, 215-383-3832. But if you want to keep typing, that's okay too. This is interesting stuff. Switzerland, Purple Pill, this is so cool. We've had Swiss listeners pretty much since the beginning of the show. We're now in our fourth year. So Switzerland's really cool. In fact, I had a TV crew that wanted to interview me from Switzerland at the last pack I attended in 2018. And so I'll be back this year in February. And hopefully I can find that Swiss TV crew again and give them the interview that they wanted 3 years ago. They had to catch an airplane, so they were packed by the time. But they're really curious what we do here in terms of citizen legislation. So Purple Pill, if you're curious too, if you want to be our Swiss connection, especially if you're interested in some of the legislation that we have and you want to bring it to Switzerland, go to writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com, and you'll be able to check out the laws that we have. And if you find one that's adaptable to the Swiss government or something that you want to pursue, and if you want to tell us how the Swiss government operates, because I have no real knowledge of it, I'd be curious. I'd have you on as a guest. We have a Skype line, by the way, too. So if you want to call from Switzerland, you just go to our Skype line, and that's easy to do. So it's right there. If you're looking at the broadcast page, you look at our information from click the thinker to start the show, kind of work your way down. International Skype calls online. Skype name, it's at live colon period CID.FDDBAC, all lowercase, 53, lowercase A, 2909, lowercase DE, and then the number one. And so it's right there on your broadcast page. So you want to call us, that's how you do it. So Skype. Skype line's working all the time. I do not speak German, no. I don't speak, I speak a little bit of some languages. I do more accents than anything else, which causes Gene to laugh. But I do not, I don't speak German. Switzerland's interesting. There's like four languages in Switzerland. You've got German, you've got, I think Flemish is spoken in Switzerland, English and French. I think of the four languages of Switzerland. Yeah, German, French, English, and Flemish. Is it Flemish or is that Belgium? Anyway, Switzerland's a cool place. I've been there. So I spent so Purple Pill. In fact, if you want to tell me, you know, which city or which, you know, rough location you are, I went to Interlaken, Grindelwald. Where else did I go in Switzerland? I love Switzerland. It was so much. I did the youth hostel thing. French, German, and Italian. Okay, good. Thanks for the language correction. Your English is fine though. So you know, keep doing that. That's the one we're going to understand. But so we need to do more with Switzerland. Maybe if you want to be a reporter from Switzerland and give us the Swiss news, you know, things that are happening in government, politics, issues, things that you folks are talking about, you're more than welcome to Skype and be a reporter. Even if you disagree with me on a bunch of issues, that's okay too. We can still talk about it, talk about how things go. I want to get correspondents from around the world calling into our show so that we can find out what's happening out there. So think about it. Think about being our Swiss you know, person to check in periodically by phone so we can actually talk to you. And if English is an issue, then you can always type in. And I'm more than happy to go over your text on the show. Got about 2 minutes left. So, Gene, anything that you think I've forgotten? Any comments you got? Oh, Gene's look at Gene a little bit. All right, so let me just go over something really quickly here. Just for the folks that are getting our press release, I'm going to kind of read it out to you here. For those if you want to get on the press release list, in fact, Purple Pill, you might want to do that too. Send me an email. We'll get you on our press release list. We've got 25 citizen-written bills to rock 2022. And the purpose of this is to give candidates and
people in office now something to run on for 2022, to give something for the midterms to talk about, and for Republicans to actually get new ideas. So I wrote here, history can be made at any, 90-second warning. History can be made at any time now by the first candidates for office that run on citizen-written legislation, the first media outlets that become news advocates instead of pretending objective journalism still exists, and the first talk show hosts who wish to evolve beyond talk radio into action radio hosts, advocating with their audiences the bills we the people consent to be governed by. These are bills that benefit all the people by increasing our freedom and restricting the power of the special interests and the deep state currently in charge by a coup that stole our government. The choice is simple. Either we write the laws we consent to be governed by, then talk about them, share them, submit them to the appropriate legislatures and willing media, and we advocate and lobby our citizen bills, or all our laws will be dictated by mandate, law, and regulation from a fascist combination of the deep state, big tech, big corporation complex. Personally, I choose to be governed as our founders intended, from the people to the government, and not the other way around. How about you? If you believe as we believe at Action Radio, then here's a package of legislation guaranteed to blow open the entire public debate through the to the 2022 midterm elections. And all you need to do is talk about them and share them. If you want to do more, call me. 215-383-3832. So that's our press release. And if you want to know the bills, like I say, you can get on the list to get them, but you can find them easily. Just go to writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. And you'll find, and then go to the legislation section on the menu, click down to all proposed laws, and all the laws I'm talking about are right there. I have to end the show here. Purple Pill, thanks for joining us. Here we go. Born and raised Santa Rosa Island's finest. Well, that's interesting. We'll find out what Santa Rosa Island is. Purple Pill, we'll get you next time. Thanks for joining us. Feel free to type in anytime. Jean, thank you, Sue. Thanks to all our callers. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And, of course, our website where the bills are, writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS. And, again, Switzerland checking in. I told you, we're an international show. This is going to be an international phenomenon. It's only a matter of time. All right, back tomorrow morning.